kids, it's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. Joining as usual, Cole, how are you doing?
I am a dabbing unicorn in a sea of not dabbing unicorns.
And if you want to get that joke, check out our Patreon.
the dabbing unicorn of record that we were talking about is the third result if you Google dabbing unicorn.
Yeah. So. But it's totally an original art piece.
Yes.
Suitable for
not steal.
Yeah. Steal like an artist.
As you could tell, Tim Ekibis is here, Chris Taylor's here, Pernell Vaughn is here. How's everyone doing?
What day is it?
Good. It's Tuesday.
Yeah. Oh, no. Tuesday. Oh, party cast day.
I can tell, yeah, you gotta put stuff like this on your calendar so that you know what day it is.
What calendar? I threw out calendars long ago.
It is hard to keep track of what day it is anymore. I've been sleeping so much.
I have a Breath of the Wild calendar in my kitchen.
I have to keep up with the dates because I have kids, and sometimes they have to do NTI, and sometimes they do not.
I was about to say, what are they doing? Oh, NTI, you mentioned that last week, too.
Yeah, but we're actually not doing NTI this week because it's spring break.
Woo, spring break!
We're free until next month.
Woo, spending in the
millennials
kitchen.
Millennials going to the beach on spring break.
Even in the backyard.
All the children at the beach.
Do you know what my kids have done all week?
What have they done all week?
Played in the creek. Like little rednecks.
Out in the creek.
Yeah, no, there's a difference between a crick and a creek.
Yes, I know.
Where they are in the creek.
I like to say crick.
the little rednecks they have been running around like little barefoot maniacs. I say little, even though two of them are teenagers now. The youngest one's still little-ish.
I was going to say, you can be little and a teenager.
Yeah.
Some people do it.
They've been crazy. It was funny because number three the other day, I hadn't told them they could get in the creek. They'd been in the creek the day before, and I didn't think anything of it when they said they were going outside. And I stepped out to tell them to come in for lunch. And number three comes around the side of the house, and she is sopping wet head to toe. Everything about her hair is just hanging in big curly strings, sopping wet, water dripping. I'm like, well, I'm not going to say her full name, but I said, number three, what on earth have you been doing? And she said, having fun. I was like, get your little ginger ass in here and dry off. Go get some lunch.
So at least you could keep things exciting in your neck of the woods. What's everyone else been up to? Like, the excitement of my week was we went to Walmart to pick up some groceries, and they had Mountain Dew Frostbite, which is a new flavor that's Walmart exclusive. So.
Is it good?
It's like a better Voltage. It's like a blue raspberry, blueberry kind of flavor. I dig it. It's pretty good.
Wait, what is this drink now?
It's called Mountain Dew Frostbite.
I'm just, the first thing I thought of was like, it's so good, you'll cut off your foot.
Okay, but what?
You'll gnaw off your arm.
Kind of frostbite. I don't know. I'm still about Supernova. It hasn't come back. That's enough for me to say, Mountain Dew, get your shit together. You're missing out on the real fruit flavor.
Oh, I miss Supernova so much. That really was the best flavor.
It really was. And then what was the one that won that time? Was it Voltage?
Yeah, it was Voltage, and Voltage fucking sucks.
Yeah, it does. Like, I'll drink it over nothing, but compared to what was competing against it, no, I didn't have a chance. The best thing it had going for that, it was blue.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, Mountain Dew politics.
Mountain Dew politics.
They're the only politics I want to talk about.
Yeah, it's better than real life politics because real life politics just makes me very angry.
I hear that. I mean, admittedly, Mountain Dew politics can make me angry, but they make me thirsty too. So, in a sense, I win because I satisfy that thirst with sugary tastes. What's not to love? I get angry about real politics. What am I satisfying that shit with? A fist to the wall? I ain't got time for that. Poor healthcare? I ain't got time for that.
That's true. Just start swinging. That's all you can do.
And then you can't get...
Complain on Facebook like everybody else. Share a meme.
Exactly.
That's the discourse.
You get to complain like, you're not taking this seriously, Pernell. Did you just share a picture of a guy complaining to the screen about the potential candidates? Like, why wouldn't I do that? Laughing is all you can fucking do anymore. You got to laugh at everything. And if you're not laughing, you're crying. I ain't got time for that shit. I got chuckling to do.
Cole, I like that you're just sending me bad artwork on Facebook now.
These are all from the today's art gallery. I'm sending you the ones I'm going to lose to.
Oh, my Lord. You have to let that go. We're on to the show now.
I can't.
We're on to the show now. It's a different time.
Advertisement for the Patreon bonus.
Yes.
Yeah. It was
that good. We can't move past it.
Patreon.com/the SML podcast. No, give us a buck and listen to some dumb shit. Yeah, game reviews. There's a lot of game reviews. Should we just dive into things today, or did anyone have anything they wanted to talk about?
Honestly, that's the weirdest thing of all. I got a feeling there's not going to be a lot. Well, who knows? Maybe someone will have some exciting junk, but I am genuinely curious about how people are just rolling in general, because like the world in my end has kind of stopped, but I still go to work every day. Like, it's been an odd situation where I'm having trouble gauging what it's like for other people outside of my bubble. And I should probably clarify that a bit more. So if you read the news, you always hear stories about like some chucklehead having like a party of like 50 people in his house. And,
you read about me.
That was you! That was you, you son of a bitch!
50 people in my house, no one would be able to move.
Yeah, like I hear all these stories like people doing crazy dumb shit. I am admittedly thankful that I have not noticed that around here. Even in the areas where I'd expect people to do dumb stuff, I haven't really been noticing it. I mean, at best, there are small things like the neighbor will occasionally have like a relative drive up in the car, maybe drop off some stuff or whatever, which isn't what you're supposed to do. But I'll admit, it's like the one guy visiting his house, the only guy that ever visits his house, versus, I don't know, a caravan of chuckleheads showing up. I don't know. Yeah. But like, have you guys noticed anything like that in your particular areas where like you just see like, man, that guy's clearly fucking this up?
Pretty much what I see is my street. So everyone on my street seems to be behaving. My child played with the children across the street by having a street between them and like running races on opposite ends of the street. It sucks because he's almost five, but like he doesn't really understand everything that's going on, and he doesn't understand why he can't just go across the street and play with his friends up close. That sucks. He just thinks we're being mean, but they had fun yelling at each other and running back and forth, and that was nice. And then a huge storm rolled in.
I saw those pictures on Facebook. Like, what, a 20-minute difference between bright and sunny?
Oh, it was
and
10. It was ridiculous. It, like, just watching it roll in, and then I was like, oh, there's lightning. Then there was thunder. Then I was like, oh, party's over. Go indoors. Huge downpour. Yeah, well, I mean, you could see it coming. It wasn't like a huge surprise. I guess it would be 2 weeks ago at this point, which was the last time I was into my work for a full day, because we had to get everything ready. We had to like prepare a bunch of devices for kids to be able to take home. I work at a school, and one of the guys I work with, he's from another department, and he was just in. He came down to chat with us. He was just talking about how he had been out for St. Patrick's Day and going to bars the previous weekend, all just like, "You fucking idiot."
Jesus.
Like, it was literally just like, you know, we like you, you're an okay guy, but this was fucking stupid. And I just left the room because I was going to share with him some sweet chin music. I was just like, are you fucking kidding me? He's like, what? I'll be fine. I'm young. Whatever. You know, I would do what I want. I was like, you fucking, come on, man.
And think
like,
about other people and not yourself, you selfish prick.
It's not even just that. It's the fact that even if you were being, which he was being selfish, but there's been enough time. The news is out there. It's your age has very little to do with it. It's like, yeah.
Yeah. So, mm-hmm. I mean, I guess it wasn't out there as much. Like, it was really... I mean, things have changed a lot in 2 weeks. And 2 weeks before that, it seemed like it wasn't going to be a concern at all, almost.
Yeah.
It's been a long month. So
that's actually one of the things that we're dealing with, because we had bought season passes to go to the amusement park this summer.
Oh.
And obviously now we can't use them. Mm-hmm. And so we've been fighting for like 2 weeks to get them to refund them. And they're like, well, we don't know. It could be fine by the summer. I was like, my immune system's compromised. I can't take that risk.
Yeah, we're not bitch, going.
Bitch, I want my $300 back.
Yeah.
And then yeah. I tried to call the day, and like they're like, our office is closed due to the coronavirus. I was like, uh-huh. But you fucking are.
Mm-hmm. You don't want to hear it. Yeah, but going to the grocery store is awesome right now. I mean, there's dread. There's that inescapable sense of dread that... But also, like, they've moved a bunch of displays to make it easy to move around. Nobody is there. Like, it's great. They had toilet paper today.
Oh,
yeah,
it's
the first time.
You live in the high life over there.
My ass is gonna be clean tonight.
Yeah, actually, no. I saw toilet paper yesterday. I had to run out and get something at a store closer to my house. The closer you get to the city of Buffalo, the better your chances of finding toilet paper, because the crazy white suburbanites won't go close to Brown Town.
Oh, jeez.
One way fucking, to Brown Town.
It's Buffalo, man. But yeah, so I saw toilet paper. Yeah, it's just like, oh my God, there's nobody here. I just want it to always be like this in the store. Like, even after this is over, just like only let in, like, you know, 25 people at a time. Keep all the displays out of the way so there's lots of room to move. Like, oh, it's just great. But I don't know. I guess eventually things will go back to normal.
From an immunocompromised state, I just have to say that I appreciate that the rest of the world now has to live with the same bullshit I've been living with for the last 7 years.
Yeah.
But it is... I've mentioned it before. Like, my husband has to take like all these precautions because he does all our shopping and stuff. I haven't left the house in over a month. It's horrible.
Jeez. That would drive me cuckoo bananas.
The moment they were like, there's a case in Kentucky, my husband was like, sit your whore ass down. You're not going anywhere.
Yeah, my wife basically yelled at me to make the grocery store run last week so she could get out of the house. I was like, all right.
I'm stir crazy. I am.
Yeah.
And I'm used to like not going anywhere, but I'm still stir crazy. But like, he has to go through all these stupid precautions. If we get something in the mail, he goes out and gets it. He wears gloves. He sanitizes it. Then he takes gloves off, throws them away, has to get another pair, bring it in the house. Like, he's all panicky over every little thing, even more so than usual.
No, it makes sense.
I'm not allowed to. Yeah,
might be overboard, but better safe than sorry, I suppose.
I'm not allowed to, like, put away groceries or even he's even handled like doing 90% of the cooking. He just doesn't want me to touch anything. I'm in a bubble right now.
Your beer's my jam says they haven't seen another human being in 29 days.
Boy.
If something happens to me, he has to learn to like pay the electric bill, and that would be horrible.
You hear that, root beer? You're about to learn to pay the electric bill.
That's how you got to protect yourself.
Lupier did want us to address some rumors going around. There's been some rumors for the Mario 35th anniversary that they're going to be re-releasing some Mario classics. Tim, have you heard about this news?
Yes, I have heard about this. Yeah, the specific word. Well, okay. So one is that there's going to be a new Paper Mario this year, which checks out. There hasn't been a new Paper Mario in some time, and certainly not on the Switch. Two is that you're going to see, finally, Mario 3D World, previously released on the Wii U, which everyone has kind of been staring at and been like, why isn't this Wii U game been ported up to Switch yet?
Yeah, seriously. Sounds like
the rumors on that.
3D World 2 at this point. Just give me the new shit.
Yeah, but it's, nah. You know, Odyssey is on Switch. I don't know. But either way, so yeah, World, which not nearly enough people played because it was on the Wii U and is a tremendous Mario game. Sounds like that. Might finally be getting its port, and Mario Galaxy is the other name I have seen it named.
I've heard that 3D World will be its own release, and then they're going to have a package of Mario 64, Mario Sunshine, and Mario Galaxy.
Okay. And that's Galaxy 2. That's what I heard. Put Galaxy 2 on there. Why? Why are you leaving Galaxy 2 out? That's the best one.
They should have all of them on there. Put all the fucking great Mario games on
They're
there.
All fantastic, except Sunshine.
Sunshine is still good.
It's okay.
I love Sunshine, to be honest with you. I thought that game was great.
I just say nice to see that Mario is finally getting some recognition from Nintendo. I mean, finally
some Mario games. Mario in some games.
Look, I feel like my only real gripe about Sunshine, ultimately, when I was done with it, was that I just wish there was more like wacky world variety. Everything was island based. Like every world, they were different ish. But they still felt ultimately more samey than usual just because
The whole beach theme and the whole everything revolved around the water pack. It's definitely a lot less variety than other Mario games. And I have not touched it since 2002 or whatever, whenever it came out.
Just one hey, power up. Because to me, the best thing about Mario is power ups.
Mario World. Hell yeah, I'm down for all of the rumored stuff.
Yeah, should be a good anniversary year for Mario. We'll see what happens. I'm excited to see if some of this stuff comes to fruition.
Yeah. One thing I'll suck though, like they end up doing all this, is like, what did Sonic get for his anniversary when they did the movie was great, but I feel like that doesn't really count as like Sega's bit. That's like more like another company's like, hey, we want to do a movie about Sonic, but Sega didn't develop the movie. So I was like, what else did we get about Sonic? Yeah, Sonic Forces back then. Like, man, no one likes Sonic Forces. And, his anniversaries were just terrible. Like, he never really got much good for that. But after this Mario one, when we look sideballing that character and again and going into their future like, next one.
Mario and Sonic at the 2020 Olympics. Huh.
Yeah.
Remember it was? Those?
That was the game that came out last fall and the Olympics that are now going to be next year.
Hopefully it'll be next year.
Maybe
Hopefully. They'll
re-release 2021 in a patch.
Maybe. just cross out the number. Here you go.
It was a cool game. It's fun to play with my kid. He really likes it.
I heard a lot of good things about that weird retro mode they slapped
in. Yeah, that was the 1960 or whatever. That was really cute, a really cute addition. I haven't played any of those games before, but you know, it's fun, you know, sports mini game stuff. My kid can get down on that.
The only thing that bothered me with the retro mode is that Mario was an 8-bit and Sonic was in 16-bit.
Well, there's no 8-bit Sonic.
Yes, there is.
Okay, there is an 8-bit Sonic, but...
Game Gear and Master System, baby.
Yep.
He's like, I'm ready!
They could have used 16-bit Mario. That's what I'm saying. They could have kept it consistent across the whole retro theme of having it look 16-bit, I guess.
I think they should have thrown in 32-bit Crash Bandicoot just to screw with people.
Activision involved.
Bunch of a dozen untextured polygons.
Just thinking about for the hammer throw event.
Yeah,
pixelated ass looking Game Gear Sonic on there.
Yeah,
that would be
great. Moves too fast and you can't control him.
Oh my god, screen is a blur.
Friggin' Game
like,
Gear.
He moves and there's like those little shadows that follow him.
Oh my god,
the LCD screen. Yeah, that would have been great.
I had a Nomad I recently sold.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, you know who the previous owner of that Nomad was? Matt Pollard.
Really?
Yep. I bought it from him in like the mid-2000s.
I haven't heard his name in a long time.
Yeah, I had a car adapter for it, so I actually had it in my car and I could just pull it out and play Genesis games. I drove, so it didn't really come up very much, but I offered it to the passenger. Though there was one time after a MAGFest where I was not driving because I was very tired, and after I woke up from a brief nap, I played some Streets of Rage 2 in my car. It's cool.
Nice.
Anyway,
we should probably get to reviews because there are a lot of them.
What? Yeah. Uh-huh.
We got a lot to talk about tonight. Is everyone ready to dive into these?
Sure.
suppose so.
All right, because the first game to talk about tonight is called Persona 5 Royal, developed by P-Studio, published by Atlas, released March 31st on PS4 for $59.99. Don the Mask of Joker and join the Phantom Thieves of Hearts, break free from the chains of modern society and stage grand heists to infiltrate the minds of the corrupt and make them change their ways. Persona 5 Royal is packed with new characters, story depth, new locations to explore, and a new grappling hook mechanic for access to new areas. Tim, tell us about Persona 5 Royal.
Did you say for $54.99 is the retail on?
$59.99.
I thought you said 54. Yeah. Okay, that would have been just weird if it was 54 because nothing ever is. Hey, Persona! Woo! 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 Persona! Okay, so yeah,
that's the whole review.
That's the review. Persona. Fucking might as well.
$59.99. What's your verdict?
Yeah, Persona. Yeah, so I am a long time fan of the Persona, well, and by extension the Mega Ten series. So I've played a lot of these and have a lot of history with it. So Persona 5 Royal, this is the updated version of Persona 5 in the line of like Persona 3 Fez or Persona 3 Portable or Persona 4 Golden. Yeah. That one. So it's like it's taking original Persona 5 and it is jamming a bunch of new stuff into it for sort of like a definitive edition. They do this a lot with those. There has been many, you know, across the series where you just see updated re-releases like on the 3DS, on PS2, you'd see all kinds of just like small updates to games with more features and more stuff, and then they'd re-release it and make more money. So that's this. So if you're not familiar with Persona, the Persona games, well, as they are now. So Persona 5 came out a few years ago. It is a game where you play a Japanese high school student, and you get caught up in this whole wild world of going into another dimension where you become a phantom thief and you pull off elaborate heists with a 2-foot-tall cat creature thing to change the hearts of shitty adults and make them confess their sins and try to make the world a better place, along with your hearty crew of friends. And when you go into said world, you summon demonic personas, which are all based on various mythologies and religions and legends from around the world. That describes a lot of the Mega Ten games, really. But yeah, that's the gist. And it's cool. I just Persona 5, generally speaking, is like the Persona skipped the PS. Well, it sort of skipped the PS3 generation. Persona 5 did come out on that, but you know, this is only coming out on PS4. This is the, in my opinion, best looking, the most stylish, the best directed, best music, best battle system, gameplay, like mechanics.
So it's a pretty okay game.
Yes, it is a pretty better than okay game. The spot where I feel like it faltered was I didn't like the characters or the story as much as the past couple Persona games specifically. And the previous two is P3 and P4. I didn't dig the cast as much. The story had some really good moments, like the first palace you go through, where you're taking down this dickhead volleyball coach, PE teacher in your high school, who is like trying to like have sex with minors and like abusing his volleyball team and like pushes a girl to try to commit suicide. Real piece of shit, this guy. That is a hell of a story and a heck of a villain. But then they have to keep raising the stakes from there. And then at a certain point, it just becomes, I don't know. It's just too easy to see things coming, I guess. It's a little more rote and predictable than some of the other stories have been. But that's fine. I still think it's a good story. I still like the characters, even if they, you know, don't hold up to the quality of the investigation team for Persona 4. Like, it's still good. That's just my beef with it, as a long-term fan of the series.
When you have an issue and it's still like, I still love it, it's just not as good.
Yeah.
Like, that's...
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Let's
barely a complaint. Still,
it is. Yeah. It's a criticism, not really. But yeah, it's still, I had a blast playing through the whole game. Like, no. Yeah. I was never like, oh, this is a drag. I wish I was doing something else. It was just kind of like it taking it back on the whole. I was like, ah, you know, this is where I feel like it was kind of weak. But yeah, just like the presentation of it, the music, like the way scenes transition from one to another is so cool. There was already a lot of variety and a lot of stuff to do in the base game as it was. They did so much with the mechanics, like in the dungeons. Like in past games, they've had like a randomly generated dungeon layout. These are designed and crafted for you to go into with stealth elements and puzzles and like secrets to find and all kinds of stuff. It's great, and they're way more fun to play through than just kind of running down hallways and trying to find stairways and exits and stuff like that. So that's all base Persona 5. We're here to talk about the Royal, the new one. What came out today? What is new in this game? So the kind of the big selling point, I guess, is like, hey, there's this new character who joins your party named Kasumi, and there is a whole new school semester added to the game with an expanded story and a whole and another palace. Like the base game has like six-ish palisades and this one has a whole other one. Wow, that's a lot. That's great. Where does this come into the story? Right at the fucking end. So yeah, it does not just like if that is just to make that clear, like that character, she is in the game from very early on. Like she shows up like within the first week and you start interacting with her and you meet her and stuff like that. But like her piece of the story doesn't really take off until after everything else has happened. And there's reasons for that. But yeah, I was definitely bummed when I found out that like, oh, she's not joining my party anytime soon. She will not be. It's not some like character you're going to use through like the entire game. I thought that was a bit of a bummer, but just so you know what you're getting into, like that stuff, like that stuff is at the end. You got to play through everything else to get to that, and no, like saves don't carry over from the original. Well, because it's because they, you know, the story has been reworked. Like if you just dropped in with an end game save and walked into the new stuff, you'd be like, what the hell is going on? This wouldn't work. What I do wish is that you could carry over like a game clear save with like your new game plus stuff. I think that would be cool, but it doesn't. And so it's a whole new game. But aside from that stuff that doesn't come into play, that doesn't come up until the very end, there's a lot of other stuff. They have added a lot to this game. It's a long list if you Google it up. But I will try to hit some of the highlights. So there's a new Thieves' Den feature, which is kind of a bit off to the side, which is a bunch of unlockable bonus content. And there's like a card game mini game in there that is just in there. It's just hanging out in there for you to earn currency to buy unlocks. That's like its own little mini game thing unto itself. A big part of the Persona games is playing through your daily social life and building up your relationships with different characters. So now they have done a lot to give you more time to do that, to give you more ways to do that. Your cat doesn't yell at you to go to bed as much, which was pretty much a meme coming out of original Persona 5, is how often Morgana would be like, you need to go to bed. And you'd just be like, no, I just want to sit and craft some stuff or read a book or do something. I don't just want to go to bed. Leave me alone, cat. Eventually, like a whole new section of Tokyo will unlock for you to go to. which is a big deal because that has a bunch of new mini games and new activities to do in there and new shops and stuff like that. Just again, just more variety. There's a couple new social links. I won't say much about those and where they go or what they have anything to do with, for story spoiler purposes.
Makes sense.
They're there. I'm just not gonna, as far as combat and the dungeon exploration goes, all of the palaces have been reworked to some degree because they added in these little things. Like when you mentioned at the top with the copy that they added this grappling hook. So they put in this grappling hook, which it's in some normal area. There was a lot of like me playing through this, you know, us, me and my wife, like sitting on the couch and, you know, playing through this game and being like both looking at her and being like, is this new? Is this new? Do I remember this? She's played through the original three times. I haven't played it since it came out, you know, 3 years ago. But my feeling is that they added some grappling hook points where you could just get up above enemies in palaces and just dive on their heads. But mostly, there's new areas with new secrets. They added these things called will seeds in each palace, which if you find all three of them, you get a unique item. There's new personas to get throughout. They have added... So all the personas now have these extra traits. Like there's one where it's like, oh, all of their electric attacks cost half as much magic, or oh, they have a bonus against this defense, or oh, this, or oh, that. Not unlike how Pokemon have temperament, you know, like that. So there's even like more variety within the different personas you're collecting. They've expanded and changed things with Mementos, which is the randomized dungeon. There's a lot of stuff. There's a lot of tweaks to, what you can do with Fusion. There's like challenge battles in the Velvet Room. There's just like,
So it got dungeon. A full overhaul. This isn't just a couple of minor tweaks.
No, it's not a couple of minor things. It's a lot of things. And that's not even everything. Like this, the whole list just goes on and on and on, a bit. Like it is stuff to change the whole, you know, 100-hour experience of playing through this game, to change it up and make it different. There's a lot here. And there's new music. That is super freaking important. There is a bunch of new music. There's a new battle theme, which is not as good as Last Surprise, but what is? There was a free DLC that came out today that we were messing around with a bunch of new costumes. And when you change the costumes for your characters, it changes the battle music. So there's like, you know, costumes from Persona 3, and then it plays the Persona 3 battle music, Mass Destruction. Or there's like Strange Journey costumes, and it plays music from Strange Journey and all through Persona History.
That's cool.
Just Megaton History. Yeah, just like and it was free. So that was just like a cool thing to mess around with.
It released with a lot of DLC.
There's a couple free DLC packs up there that's just like costumes and more music and stuff like that, and it gives you a bunch of items, so that's just like cool stuff, cool bonus stuff. But on the base level, this is a great 100-hour RPG in which you get out and do a lot of socialization. So this might be the perfect time to check out Persona 5. There might not be a better time or a more appropriate time to play an RPG that leans so heavily into socializing with other human beings.
Drop it!
To replace perhaps a void in your life right now.
Or one being currently filled with animals.
Yeah, one of the two. Why not both?
Yeah. Thanks, Mr. Sinister, for the 30 bitties. Always a pleasure seeing bitties drop. Oh, man. So, as a returning player, is Persona 5 Royal worth looking into? And as a new player, which should you regular or Royal?
No, you just go, if you're new, you should just go right into Royal. It just has more stuff to play around with. There's no... Original Persona 5 has become obsolete. there's just more stuff to play around with, more variety. It just makes the game better. Like, nothing about it makes it worse. that I
do have one question.
All right, what's your question?
It's gonna be good.
All right, I can't wait.
Hush you. So, without spoiling it for those who haven't played the game yet, there's a certain character who comes up towards one of the final palaces of the game. Some stuff happens, and poof, gone. Does the added content do anything more with that person, or is it still kind of, done?
Who are you talking about? Just say, who are they? The game's been out for 4 years.
Oh, I guess you got a point. So, Catchy.
Oh, Catchy? Goro Catchy? Yeah, there's more with him.
Is it more in a sense where it's like, hey, expand on the character and like his interactions? It's just like you can fight with him longer.
They have overhauled his social link route, and he has an integral part in the post, the new stuff at the tail end in the new semester.
Oh, good, good.
So, yeah.
I'm going to make it worth it by itself.
He's kind of a shit whistle. I enjoyed beating the shit out of that guy.
Oh, he was shit. there is
more with Goro Catchy. Yeah, that's who I thought you were talking about. But yeah, yep, more with him.
Cool. So overall, $60 on Persona 5 Royal. What are you thinking?
Yeah, I think you should buy it. I mean, I think Persona, you know, returning Persona fans will know where they stand on whether they're ready to play through this game again or whether they want to play through this game again. And new people should certainly, that like Persona 5 is the best one to jump into. It's like the least grindy of any of the, I think any of the Mega 10 games, I think. Like, yeah, it's a great value. It's a nice long game. It's a ton of fun. I love it. It's
awesome. Totally worth it. My copy is coming from Target next week. It should be here.
I rolled up to, even though we got the review code, I had to roll up to Best Buy to get my Phantom Thieves edition with all the stuff, because that's what I do for every Persona game.
Nice. All right. Well, next game to talk about is called Disaster Report 4 Summer Memories, developed by Granzella, published by NIS America. It's releasing April 7th on Switch, PS4, and PC for $59.99. The world you know is gone in the shadow of a massive earthquake. You must brave a destroyed city where your choices will determine who survives. Pernell, tell us about Disaster Report 4.
So Disaster Report 4 has you playing as, until you play into the game proper, they're just kind of an unidentified, just random NPC, not NPC, but random blank slate character, be a boy or a man or a woman, you choose, and then you kind of give them a light customization job, and they are just kind of set loose on this city where, while one day riding on the bus going to, well, you choose where they're going as well, disaster strikes, an earthquake occurs, and everything immediately goes to shit. And it's interesting because even though this is a game that follows a structured narrative, so to speak, you still kind of get this sense of like you're trying to accomplish things, you're trying to do stuff, because the game gives you a whopping load of like dialogue choices in a sense. So essentially it feels like you're a character trying to survive this disastrous day in Tokyo by way of the choices you made and the interactions you make. So
Sounds like we're still talking about Persona.
We kind of are. I wish you could summon demons in this game. That'd be freaking awesome. So what ends up happening is that it's almost like what ends up happening as far as the game goes, that it goes from set piece to set piece where you're in a certain area of the city, and there will be people in the area that you can kind of interact with. So a lot of the time it's just going to be just generic dialogue. Oh, no, why is my baby crying? It was a fucking earthquake. I don't know. Or just general dialogue, but every once in a while you'll come across an NPC that has more, vibrant dialogue, more content than what they have to say. And they'll have a discussion with you. You'll have options to provide choices and responses to them, which will lead the dialogue in the conversation to just a general point to understand more about that person. And then other times still, you'll come across situations where you'll talk to a person and they might end up leading you down the road like a side quest or a mission that you need to fulfill in that area in order to make progress in the game. It can be something simple like talking to a poor man who lost his job. Why he's concerned about that during a disaster earthquake, I don't know, but he is concerned. So
there's a lot of people who lost their job now.
Oh, yeah, but let's be honest here. I think this situation is one thing, but I feel like if we were living through the kind of earthquake disaster situation that Disaster Report 4 has put you on, the job will wait until I'm somewhere safe. Like, I'm more concerned about not dying and getting out of this environment to be concerned about my job at that moment. And it also is an interesting thing about this, too, is that, which is like a parallel to our current situation, some people might be thinking, oh, this is a bad time to release this game. I mean, it's Disaster Report, and we're living like a middle of a worldwide pandemic. But I will say one interesting tidbit about this game, aside from the fact that there are two completely different catastrophic scenarios taking place, this game feels kind of nice in the fact that they make your NP, your player character, feel like they have an option. They have goals. They can try to get to safety. They can ultimately kind of exchange words and dialogue with the characters in the game, because while it is a strict narrative that's being played out, you still have dialogue choices that can impact your morality levels, because there's a morality and immorality system in the game. You can just kind of see how these players' stories take place. Like, if you play a typical JRPG, for example, well, Tim, just say you just play Persona 5, right? The game has a structured narrative. You know how it's going to end because it's written that way. But as you're playing the game, you still feel like your choices and your actions impact that world. So though it's written in a certain way, you still feel like you're a part of it. And I think this game takes care of that in a way, too. You meet people, you want them to survive, and sometimes they don't. Not everybody makes it at the end of Disaster Report 4. But you still have hopes for some people, and others you want them to get fucked. And that's fine, too. There's some pretty crappy people in this game.
Just like real life.
Just like real life. One thing I like about this game for sure, though, is that when you're running around in environments, so, like I said, there's a lot of scripting that takes place, but until you've played it for the first time, you don't know where a lot of the scripted stuff is. So you might be running around like an area of the city, like the area they put you in, and out of nowhere, the ground will start to shake, and the entire building will just start to collapse in front of you. And that is problematic, because if you're under it, you'll die. It will actually kill you.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Advice for real life as well. If a building falls on you, it may be problematic. It will kill you.
Oh
my gosh.
Don't die. If this building's a rocket, just get the fuck away. Oh. Now,
forget.
Now, if you're not beneath the actual rubble and the building is collapsing, you still want to actually, you know, pretty much push like the duck button of sorts, which allows you to kind of go low to the ground, get low to the ground, resulting in you not, you know, being tossed to the ground from the vibration of the earth, thereby taking health damage and also attributing stress to your character. So I've never let my stress get to a certain height to know what is really going to happen if you get too stressed out, because it's fairly easy to relieve yourself of the stress. Over time, it'll go down if you're not in stressful situations, or every time you go to a save point and rest, you'll also clear your rest of your stress slate as well. There's a hunger meter and a thirst meter, as well as a need to relieve yourself when the time comes. Again,
is there a poop button?
There's not a poop button, but you can look for toilets and shit in them.
Nice.
Oh, jeez.
I have to say that it was the perfect opportunity. Now, again, just like in real life, I never let my character go to the point where they had to poop and didn't poop. So I don't know what happens.
Just like in real life.
Just like in real life. So I don't know what happens to your character if you don't relieve yourself. I don't want to know
what happens in real life.
No desire to find out. Heavens,
there's a game you should look up called Don't Shit Your Pants. It's by the people who, believe it or not, it's by the people who made Rogue Legacy.
What?
I remember that one.
It's called Don't Shit Your Pants. It's amazing.
Oh, Christ on a bike. It's like pretty a character who, like, drinks laxative and is like, well, now I got to run this obstacle course and get to the toilet.
It's an adventure game. It's a text adventure game, pretty much.
There was an old-ass Xbox arcade game. Remember when they had Xbox arcade with the indies?
Mm-hmm. It
was, like, way back in the day before indies were good.
hey!
They had one that was called Try Not to Fart. It was about being on a date, and you had to do, like, different, like, button combinations and, like, different input things. It wasn't good, but it was 10 out of 10 on concept.
Oh, my Lord.
Don't shit your pants. Don't fart your butt.
Don't fart your butt.
Don't fart your butt. Now, this game, honestly, I did find myself enjoying the process of once I realized that this wasn't like some open world exploration game, which, to be completely honest with you, I've known about Disaster Report since way back in the day, but never got a chance to play any of them. So I always assumed that they were open world exploration games with the need to survive. I came to learn that this is not what they are, but once I came to accept that, I was okay with it for this game. However, there are a few things worth noting for people who are listening to this for the review content, and knowing what could be bad about that might deter me from making the buy. And there are two things I came across particularly. One, this game was originally intended to be built for the PS3, and it shows on here. So, graphically, it does look like a PS3 game, possibly a little earlier than that. Doesn't mean it's bad looking, but it's worth noting because you might get that person that's like, this doesn't look like it's on the Switch or the PS4. Like, well, yeah, because it was a game that was in development for a long time. So there's that. And the other thing is, I don't think this happened. This only happened once, but I'm just going to note it in case it happens at other points in the game too, which is that I feel like some of the, let's call them quest event triggers, aren't 100% accurate. So, give you an example, or the example that came across in my playthrough was early in the game, you are in a department store, and the owner was missing. So I went through a series of prompts and item searching to find this woman. She was trapped, and I rescued her. And when I rescued her, the game went out of its way to have her thank me and say, oh, by the way, you're welcome to take anything from the store you want as a thank you for helping me out. So I was like, oh, cool. And there were a few mannequins lying around the store that had, you could take, you say, hey, I want to wear that outfit. So you can take the outfit off the mannequin, go into the storeroom and change your clothes. By the way, you can change your clothes during the game. So I'm like, oh, just like in real life, poop your pants, peel them, whatever. Now, the thing about it was like, I changed my clothes thinking, okay, I'm allowed to do this. She gave me the okay. But as I started to leave the store, they went to a cutscene where she said, are you wearing those clothes? Those are my clothes. Did you steal those? I'm like, what? I'm like looking for the dialogue option. Says, you said I could have this shit. There was no such option. So she stripped me of the clothes and made me leave the store in my normal garb. I'm like, what the heck happened? And then when I went to talk to her again after that happened, she says, thank you for helping me again. I'm like, okay, so can I not have free clothes? Because I don't like wearing high heel shoes in the middle of this really crappy situation. But those two things were the only real issues I had. Aside from that, it was interesting to play through the narrative and see how the story played out for all the characters. And also just to see what situations I would come across next during the experience and having to kind of harrowingly get through them and help people through them. So I feel like this could go one of two ways. If you are a fan of, let's call them niche titles, because that's what they're called, like Deadly Premonition, for example, that's a key one over the years that people have known as popular in that regard. If you're a fan of stuff like that, I think this game has a similar appeal to it, where the concept is good. It has some primitive undertakings as far as like how it works, but at its core, it is still a solid title that is fun to play through. In that regard, I think it is a buy if you're a collector to go get the physical edition. I heard rumors of there's one that's going to be coming out in some way. If anything, NIS has one, I'm sure, on their site.
I'm sure they do.
They got to.
I'm sure they have some kind of ridiculous collector's edition. I'm going to look it up.
You get it's actual raft.
Probably relatively cheap, too. I bet it's like $54.99.
Comes with a raft.
Well, the game's $59.99, so I don't think a collector's edition is going to be $54.99.
I don't know. NIS is weird.
Sometimes like they do that. I've seen them do the occasion where it's like if you buy it from the store, it's retail price, and it comes in a nice box with a hat. But other times it'll be like $75 or so.
The box has a hat on it, not the
hat. Shoot, I'd buy that. The box had a hat. I need more stylish jeans on my shelf for real, though.
A hat for the box.
Yes, specifically, it comes with a new hat. I want it. I just need it.
Comes with a novelty emergency backpack.
Really?
Yeah. Nice.
It's $90.
That's actually pretty appropriate.
Stock meter, the game 0.5% left.
Ooh, that, not many.
He's just selling through.
Or none.
And it's pretty cool they do the bet because it's appropriate to the game because you do get like a storage compartment in the form of a backpack. And as you play the game, you'll find other bags that you can swap out. And those bags give you more storage space than your previous bag did. So it's kind of, I can see that's a pretty thematic thing. I like that. Now, with that said, though, if you're the type that needs your games to be, you know, top of the pops, highest frame rate per second, because this game gets a little slowy sometimes. Again, PS3, so it gets a little slow in the belly, man. If you need your game to be running at peak performance, I would say this might be good holding off on, or maybe trying on the PS4 Pro, because I played it on the Switch. So maybe the PS4 version doesn't have the same problems that this one had. But all in all, I think it's a good experience to play through. There's not too many games you can play where the premise is survive an actual, you know, like natural disaster. Usually you're creating the natural disasters.
No.
But in this one, you're actually surviving it, which is kind of cool.
Well, then $60, your verdict?
I believe it is a solid try. Otherwise, wait for a discount. But either way, I think it's worth going and giving it a shot. It's like, it's got a cool premise that we don't see very often, and I enjoyed my time with it.
Or go buy the backpack edition.
Oh, sweet backpack. You only have 5% time left. Get
or
in
zero.
It.
It might be gone already. I don't know.
That is true.
No, they will actually mark it out if it's gone.
Yeah, I figured they would.
They're pretty good about that. I know.
This episode comes like another couple days from now. Like, they could sell through by now. By the time this starts.
My first experience with their shop was trying to buy the Longest 5 Minutes special edition, and yeah, they definitely mean it when it's gone. They really update it and say it's gone.
Is it truly the longest 5 minutes as you hope to get a copy?
Yeah. I ended up going on eBay and paying the longest $100. Oh, most expensive $100. There we go.
The priciest $100. Oof.
I'm distracted. I couldn't make that joke right away.
It's okay. The feeling was there. We all felt
Thank
it.
You. Thank you.
Well, don't get too distracted, Chris, because you're next, because the next game to talk about is called Panzer Dragoon Remake, developed by Megapixel Studio, published by Forever Entertainment, released March 26th on the Switch for $24.99, is a timed exclusive, so it will show up on other platforms later. On a far lone planet, you encounter two dragons awake from an ancient times. Armed with a deadly gun from the past and the guidance of your armored blue dragon, you must fulfill your destiny and keep the prototype dragon from reaching the tower or die trying. Chris, tell us about Panzer Dragoon Remake.
I died trying. What?
Oh, I was saying I've also played this.
Oh. I
bought it with money.
Oh.
Like a sucker.
I was about, well...
Aren't Anyways, you fancy?
I know. Yeah. Fancy man with money.
Look at me.
Never mind. Okay.
Anyways.
Panzer Dragoon. So this is very... I was very, very happy to get this one because I actually had played it back in its original, like, you know, release, which was 1995, I believe. And trust me, when you're 13 in 1995 and you get to play a shooter with a 3D shooter with a dragon. It was
shit
magnificent.
Was fire.
Yeah. And
I mean, it was fresh at the time. That was a Saturn game. There was not a lot of polygonal games in the world.
Yeah. And I did not have a Saturn. It was my cousin's. So we kind of like each one of us had a different thing than the other person. Cause our moms coordinated cause we were always hanging out. So it was actually a pretty good plan, but it meant that I didn't get to grow up owning Chrono Trigger, for instance.
Oh,
he got it. So there's no reason for me to get it, you know.
What'd you get instead of the Saturn?
What did we get? I think we were the first
Philips
ones with a
CDI.
Yes. I don't remember. Right. I honestly don't.
All right.
Maybe it was a 32X, who knows.
That's
I know we got
bad.
One. Oof. We got one but on clearance. It was like $20 and the games were $1 each. It was
not bad.
Yeah.
That's about what they were worth.
That's still what they're worth. But Panzer Dragoon, yes. A game I fell in love with but did not get to play around enough with to actually get good. So I actually, as the first time I played this game, I streamed the entire experience wherein I played through the entire game on easy mode. I'm not that good. And Joe and company were in attendance. So it was really nice. Anyway, So this is a remake of the 1995 game, but this is, of course, you know, remakes, I've always said, kind of fall into two categories. One is where they completely remake the game from the ground up and, you know, or change up things like on a base level, like mechanically. And then some are where it's the exact game that you remember playing, but with a bit of polish. So like, you know, Final Fantasy VII Remake versus Final Fantasy VII on the Switch. Well, this is like Final Fantasy VII on the Switch. It is a very polished and like completely remodeled game where they drew in basically, I think they used also some like previously long lost source material from the original game or something like that. Somebody in chat was telling me about this and I didn't listen because I was shooting things. Apparently it uses assets that were like kind of dug up out of, you know, wherever Sega buried all the Saturn stuff. And, you know, like basically it looks like I funny enough was, in researching this, I was playing it, while also watching a YouTube video of the original game to see like what maybe they changed in the content, which by the way, not very much at all. And I was just like, looking at the two like side by side on my two monitors and was like, holy geez, they really made this look better. It is bright and shiny and HD and like super detailed on the Switch, and it looks magnificent, but the way that the dragon moves, the way the enemies move, the way that everything in it moves, besides the fact that it's a smooth like 60 frames a second or whatever, whatever modern standard is, you know, and no slowdown or anything like that. Besides all of that, it actually moves like it's a game made with 12 polygons, like the original. So it's like, it's this really interesting cross-section of being able to, of like, playing like the original, but looking like a brand new kind of game. Like, it's a weird, like, it's a weird place that it falls into, but that was, like, basically the best way that I could think of to want to play it, especially as somebody who wanted to experience the original and was kind of denied it in certain ways. So the point of Panzer Dragoon is that, you know, the story is, there's no text in the story whatsoever, I think, except in the ending credits or whatever. And like a little bit in the intro, it's mostly told through like the CG vignettes that back in 1995 would completely blow your mind. But in, you know, in 2020 is just kind of like, you know, you're like, okay, I kind of get the gist that there's something going on here. And, but you know, back in 1995, of course, that was deep lore, probably written in the instruction book. But yeah, you're basically a guy who flies a dragon. You got a gun, the dragon's got breath. And the whole thing plays from a behind the ship, quote unquote, rail shooter, a lot like Star Fox, and its ilk. So that's basically what you're looking at. You have a standard shot that, you know, pew pew pews, with a reticule to aim it. And if you hold down the button, then the reticule will spin around. And when it's like spinning pretty fast, then it will start to auto target enemies. And, it'll auto target up to, it seemed like it was something like 8. And, once you have, you know, something, you know, auto targeted and then you release the button, it will send a missile-esque like shot towards that enemy and do like a little bit of damage. Yeah, it's a laser. Okay.
Dragons breathe lasers.
Dragons breathe lasers. Yes. But yeah. So you basically go through these stages that are, you know, everything from like a sprawling, like oceanic, like thing with like ruins and, one of the most fantastic songs, I think, in video game music, which is, I think it's called Soaring. And, by the way, an aside on the music, I attributed the soundtrack to Saori Kobayashi, she's the composer of Panzer Dragoon Saga and Orta. And she currently is like remastering and remixing like the soundtracks to the previous two games, to Panzer Dragoon and Panzer Dragoon Zwei. But she's not the original composer of Panzer Dragoon. That is Yoshitaka Azuma. So apologies to this guy who has no credits in the last 20 years. And only has 5 games to his credit that I could find. He is the person, or, well, I assume that's a male name. But yeah, the Yoshitaka Azuma is the actual composer of Panzer Dragoon. Anyway, So you go through about six stages of this, and like I said, each one has like a totally different like type of background. They have different enemies, different experiences. One has you fighting giant sandworms that like pop in and out of the ground, and like, you know, you have to like take them down. You know, you fight battleships, entire like fleets of enemies, and of course the prototype dragon who keeps appearing as kind of the Star Wolf to our dragon Star Fox. And yeah, like the other like kind of situation going on with it is like, not only can you look straight forward and like aim and stuff, the game has you rotating the camera to an exact angle. That is to say, when you push one of the shoulder buttons, you will look to your right, and then the right is now your field of vision, and then you control the reticule from there. Or, you know, you can look behind you directly or to the left. And as you fight enemies, they're constantly like moving around your dragon. So it's not like a smooth thing where you just like use the right stick or something to like, you know, look around a 360 view. Like, you actually do have to switch between these planes of view, and that adds a nice challenge to it as well. Took a lot to get used to, but then, you know, that's from the original game, and, you know, eventually I got it to where I could, you know, actually function this way. But what this game has added versus the Saturn port is actually a new modern control scheme that does utilize the right stick, but in kind of a different way. So there's now a new setting where basically the left stick controls the dragon's movement, so you can dodge things like enemies and enemy fire and things like that, but the right stick controls just the reticule. So you can now like fly over to the upper left of the screen and aim in the lower right or the lower left, or, you know, something like that. Gives you a whole new range of movement, but at the same time, it's really hard to get used to if you've gotten, used to the classic control scheme. And, but, you know, it does bring it a little more in line with the modern games, but not without, you know, without remaking the whole game. It just gives you a little more dimension to the control, which is nice.
Let me tell you, I thought it was fucking unplayable with the modern controls. I hate it.
Same.
I could not wrap my head around it. I was like, what the? And the thing is, like, because, like, I fired it up and I didn't get to actually, like, I watched the intro cutscene. I set my options, but I didn't actually get to play for one reason or other. So I started playing, and I'm like, why does the game play like this? I don't remember it being like this. And then I was like, oh, wait, what was that? What was that thing in the options? And then I was like, hey, I turned that off, and I was like, oh, God, okay, yeah, that woof.
And another thing is that because this is a rail shooter, like, there's going to be, like, it very thankfully has the option to invert the Y-axis or not. Some people, like Joe mentioned in my chat, that, like, when it comes to rail shooters, you know, he's usually an inverted Y-axis pro like myself.
Yeah.
But
with,
in fact,
with on rail stuff and with using a reticule, I can't do inverted. It just feels weird for me.
Yeah. Hmm. Whereas I couldn't get through level one without it inverted. And once I inverted it, I was like, okay, this still feels fine. And yeah, with the modern controls, I couldn't make head nor tail of it either, but I at least acknowledge where it is useful for people who want to learn how to do that. And of course, both are optional, so that's, you know, excellent. And again, I beat the whole game with the classic control scheme and Y inverted, so that's, mm-hmm. you know, there's something for everybody in there. And then I got actually some, taking it back to Saori Kobayashi, sorry, I'm bad at pronouncing names.
Welcome to my life.
I know.
Okay, they're in Japanese.
Still, no excuse. Yeah. I've heard her name many times.
Fair enough.
So, speaking of her, there is going to later, apparently, be an update to the game where they're going to add in her remixed version of the soundtrack, I think as an optional alternative to the original. I hope, because I love the original. Again, the first stage theme is one of my favorite pieces of video game music, and I'm a fan of the genre. But anyways, but yeah, ultimately,
do you need to say that, really?
Do I need to say that? Yeah,
do we
I
know?
Might as well, right? Believe it or not, I actually like to listen to music from video games. What?
Shocker. That blows my mind.
Yeah, so, yeah, as the only, like, I really don't have any complaints about this remake. I mean, it's everything the original game was with, like, the modern accoutrement, if you will.
Accoutrement.
Yeah. Accoutrement. Thank you. I was bluffing on how to pronounce that. I knew it was French. And it's got some new options for new players, old options for old players. And the only, you know, the only thing about it, and this is the same for literally every like shooter and rail shooter and everything like that. It's a little short, but it's also not a $60 game. So that's not going to detract. It's got enough levels.
Tim, what did you think?
No, I really liked it too. I think it's a really good looking remake of the game. It looks really nice. And I won't say like a 100% modern like 2020 game, but it looks really nice and sharp. It's a good graphical upgrade. It plays well. I'm really happy at the prospect of possibly getting more Saturn ports, and you know, especially that one other Panzer Dragoon game that costs like $500 to own.
Well, yes.
More than that now, which I used to own. I used to own. And I did play through it. And it's a phenomenal game. So I'm hoping that we'll get more. But yeah, I think it looks great. And yeah, it might be a little on the short side, but there's not really a lot of 3D rail shooter games of this type anymore.
It's a little outdated now.
But yeah. I think it's a cool genre. I wish there was more of them. Like, I freaking Nintendo won't make a damn normal Star Fox.
I know, right?
All right, well, Chris, $25. What do you think of Panzer Dragoon Remake?
Yeah, totally worth it. Buy it to support the fact that they're, I think, planning on coming out with Zwei and Saga. Like, somebody, again, in my chat that knows a lot more than I do was insistent that I have to think
that's where it's headed.
It has to be, yeah.
I'm pretty sure Zwei's already in the works. I don't know if Saga is or not, but oh my god, I hope Saga is. Hopefully. And then if you have an Xbox One, you could play Panzer Dragoon Orta on the Xbox One.
Yeah.
In 4K.
On Game Pass!
If you have an old ass Xbox, hook that up with your CRT and
I'd rather play 4K on the Xbox One.
Okay, fine.
It's on the 360 too, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's where I'm playing it.
No, you could play it on any of them, so. Alright, next game to talk about is called Sin Slayers, developed by Goon Swarm, published by Black Tower Games, released March 26th on the Switch for $19.99. RPG with roguelike elements set in a dark fantasy world where your choices determine how challenging the fights and enemies will be. Tim, tell us about Sin Slayers.
Sin Slayers. Yeah, you said the name and I was like, oh shit, that's me. I'm like putting out my proverbial cigarette over here like, oh fuck, right, I gotta do work. Yeah, Sin Slayers. So, this is actually a pretty cool game. I know some people kind of like might recoil from like the term like roguelike. Everything is a roguelike these days. And I was like, oh God, not another one. It's not, it's really like very minimal in my estimation in this game. It's more of just like a straight RPG dungeon crawler. It just happens that the dungeons you go into are just randomly generated. Like, as far as I can tell, that is what, when they say roguelike, that's what they mean. It's not like when you die, you don't drop all your shit on the spot, or whatever, have to go back to nothing. Like, you just go back to, kind of your hub and you keep all your items and all your stuff, and then you just move forward. The game has a, like, it's sprite based artwork. It has kind of like a turn of the 16-bit era graphical quality to it. So think like Suikoden level of like sprites, which I think just like a little better than what you saw on SNES, but what you did not see much of on PS1 because polygons had to be everything.
Yeah.
So that's what it evoked for me, like the your party characters and your monsters. That's what I felt like they looked like. So you have this party of three characters who stumble into this old church, and the dude who runs the church is like, "Hey, great, you're here." And they're like, "What?" And he's like, "Yeah, you're gonna help me out with this problem with these demons that are haunting the land." I don't know what demons do, terrorize. They don't really haunt, they're not ghosts. they're not spooky per se. So yeah, you guys are here, so you guys are gonna take care of this demon problem for me. And they're like, "We are?" And he's like, "You are." And they're like, "Okay." So you set out initially with a party of three characters. You start out with like a warrior, an archer, and a cleric. And you go on to these random dungeons and you explore them, and you There's a lot of combat. There's a decent amount of combat there. You only see squares you have not explored will be blacked out in like a fog of war sort of thing. So you actually have to step onto the square in order to see what is there. So you can't see a monster even if you're standing right next to it. Which is kind of annoying. I feel like it would be nice if you could see what was right next to you, but you can't. There's monsters, there's traps, there will be, treasure chests around, there will be events where, like, there's this whole system in this game. The game Sin Slayers has this eponymous sin system where it's like, oh, you found some bags lying by the road. If you open up these bags, you will gain sin points. And if you leave them alone, you will lose sin points because just doing a good act means that you're being not sinful and thus doing a good job. Just doing the normal person thing is a good act of this game. So you know there'll be like, oh, do you want to like crack open this tomb here or search this body? And doing any of those things to try to look for items or whatever will increase your sin meter. And as you increase your sin meter, enemies in the area will get more powerful, and things will generally get more hairy. But let me tell you right now, just never fucking sin, because it's never fucking worth it. This is advice, again, for real life and for the game Sin Slayers. Because, man, I didn't get shit. It was never worth it. Like, 90% of the time when I was like, okay, I'm going to search this body, I'm going to overturn this crypt, I'm going to look through these bags. Anytime I did that, like, I found either nothing, or I got attacked by a monster, or there was a trap there, and I fell into a trap and took some damage or got poisoned or something. It was just like, there was never enough reward for sinning to make it a thing that really felt worth it. Which was weird, because it seemed like being titular to the game that it would be more integral. But either way, that aside, everything else that's going on here is pretty cool. So you get into battle and you have your three characters. There will never be more than three monsters on the other side. Your characters build up a rage meter, and then you can expend your rage in order to do certain abilities you have will cost rage in order to do. The tactics of how your characters are positioned matters, because if you are attacking an enemy that is straight across from your character, you will do 100% damage or have 100% chance to hit. And if they're like lower, like if you have your archer, say, on the top level of your party, and you're trying to target the monster that is two levels down, two planes down, you will suffer a penalty to that. So that's something you have to take into consideration. Monsters have weaknesses and strengths that you need to take into consideration. Status effects, all that good RPG crap. Your characters have, for their life, they have armor. Armor is affected by the equipment you're wearing, and then they have their actual health meter. So when you get into a fight, your armor meter will be the first thing that takes damage, and then like your actual health will take damage. Your armor regenerates after every fight. Your health does not, which makes it a good thing that you get a healer right off the bat, because boy was she in my party all the damn time. I did not get someone with substantial enough healing capabilities to outright replace her, which is kind of bad. I wish there was like some more healing options, but it was just like, man, if I wanted to get through these areas, I needed her there to keep people healthy. There is no healing outside of battle with items or abilities or otherwise, so it is important to keep your characters healthy in battle. Well, there will be, what are they called? Fountains? You can find fountains in the area that will restore your health. That is the only way. You can't just like, oh, I'm just going to swig some health potions after this battle. No, not happening. Each map will have a boss character that you need to find and defeat in order to clear that level and then move on to the next one. Most of the areas are broken down into two levels. One will have like a sub boss, and the second one will have one of the sins in it, one of the seven deadly sins given corporeal form. Yes, but the whole idea is go through, defeat the mid-boss, then do the next stage, and then defeat one of the sins. And as you defeat the sins, there's these little flames back in your hub. Your hub is the old church. Those will be extinguished until you have defeated them all and save the day. Good job. At the church, you can pick up side quests, so you start out with three characters in this game, but there's like 15 or so total that I think you will recruit. And some you will find out in levels by doing certain things. Some will just drop in at certain points of the story. Some will show up and have side quests that you need to accomplish in order to join you. And you end up with a really good variety of, like, okay, you start out with like kind of those basic three, but then you start getting like different melee classes. You start getting different magicians, different DPS type characters. So you have like a bunch of different characters you can mess around and experiment with. And the way that experience and leveling works in this game, like obviously when you beat a battle, you get some experience points. But once you get a character to level 2, you can start using these gems to level up your character, and they max out at level 5. So, like, my first couple characters, like, when I was just kind of, like, farting around and trying to figure out how everything worked, I was like, oh, I have these gems. I will use these gems. Oh, my character is now max level. Boom. Just like that. and you will also need to use gems in order to unlock their skill tree, which took me a while to figure out that I was like, man, I don't have an item to do this. I wish I had more abilities. Oh, wait. And I'm, like, looking at the description. And I'm like, okay, I need this gem. It says it's sold by merchants. Well, I'm like, well, the only merchant I have this merchant here, and then the blacksmith that sells stuff. And then I was like, oh, the blacksmith sells these gems that I need to unlock all this. So I'm going to buy a ton of them right now to unlock this shit for all of my characters. So don't be like me. Look at your blacksmith's inventory, kids. So yeah, you have a bunch of different characters to choose from. Each characters, as you unlock their different ability levels, will have different, like, either passive or, active, you know, selectable battle commands to choose from. So you can pick, like, one of out of, like, two or three. So you have different strategies you can implement. And at the end of the day, you just have, like, a bunch of different, like, cool RPG systems to engage with. I mean, it's a pretty, you know, in context, it's pretty straightforward, like, dungeon crawler sort of deal. But there's so much to deal with and think about and play with in terms of, like, how your characters are built and, like, the different enemy compositions. And, characters will sometimes have, you'll run into an enemy on the map and it will show you, like, what the enemy party looks like. And some characters have an option, like your archer that you get right off the bat has a ability with a cooldown where you can just run away from the battle. Like, you run into a battle and you think your odds are shit, you can just run away. There is a character that will stun them. There is a character that will just do straight damage. There is a character who will, if you step on a trap while traversing the map, he will take all the damage for your party. So there's just, like, lots of, like, things to, like, think about and play around with. And despite the fact that, like, I don't know, the battles can go on, there is options to speed up the battle animations, which you will want to turn up all the way immediately to get through these battles. Not that there's tedious, there's just a lot of them, and like, you're not really missing out on anything by making the animations go faster. So there's just, like, a lot to mess with. In terms of my beefs, there is, and I kind of touched on a couple things, like, yeah, the sin system just seems dumb. Like, the game seems too preoccupied with being like, ha ha, sucker, you thought you were going to get something out of this. Instead, you're in a fight, or you got nothing, or you got poisoned. And just like, man, come on, like, give me some good shit once to, like, make me want to sin, like, tempt me, daddy. There's quite a bit. The game has tutorials, but like I mentioned, there are some things that kind of go unexplained that you end up having to figure out yourself, for better or worse. I do, you know, as a fan of the Souls games, I do love trying to figure that stuff out. But man, do I wish I'd realized that, like, oh, the gems are just right there with the blacksmith. If they just said, like, oh, you need, like, if someone just pointed at me, maybe there was one and I just missed it or forgot about it and all the details. It's like, ah, damn it, I wish I'd known that. And this is a port of a PC game, and the UI, it's fine on a controller, but definitely, like, when you're going through the menus, it can get a little fumbly bumbly. Like, the icons for the different tabs are allotted vertically, but you still hit L and R to go through them, which is just, like, a mind thing for me. But then it's, like, you have to just, like, sometimes, like, trying to select things. Like, you clearly, it's adapted from a system where you use a cursor to click on an object and then look at its stuff. Or, like, the inventory, you clearly, you know, you drag and drop things in. Also, like, I don't know why, it's unclear sometimes why some characters can equip one thing but not another. Like, I have this hat sitting in my inventory with bonuses to healing that I can't put on my healer, and I'm just like, who can wear this? Nobody I have can wear this. Who is this hat for? I don't know. Nobody can wear it. I don't know. Maybe it can go on the head upon the head of someone who doesn't do healing, which is not very useful, is it? Yeah, you pick up a bunch of loot for crafting or selling as you may. Yeah. I had a lot of fun with it. This is the, it is billed as the enhanced edition. They have added, among other things, there is a fourth act to the game, which they make available pretty quickly. I'm assuming the northerner character, who is kind of like a Viking, he shows up like almost right away, like big crack appears in the wall of the old church, with this Viking dude. And he's like, hey, can you help me with this shit? And you're like, yeah, we'll get to it eventually. Maybe, I guess. Dude who just came through the wall through a portal. So that's a new area. There's only one boss to that area. You can go to it right off the bat. I would not recommend that. Even after I had cleared out several other areas and defeated several sins, I was getting straight whomped when I was like, oh, I should probably look at this for the review. Yeah, the monsters in there were just like, just kicking my ass. So yeah, you can go there first, but maybe don't. To do other stuff first. Yeah, but I was pleasantly surprised. It was a pretty fun, it had some pretty cool stuff going on in this Sin Slayers.
Nice. So $20 on it. What's your verdict?
Yeah, I think it's totally worth it for like a little, I mean, there's tons of RPGs out there that you could dive into, but this has got some like different stuff going on from all the others. And, that definitely makes it appeal to me, even if it's a little like, kind of messy or a little weird or like a little clunky at some points. Like doing new interesting stuff is always going to catch my eye.
All right. Sounds good. Well, Tim, that is it for you. Did you want to stick around or were you going to get going?
No, I'm going to go to bed. Got to go get some teeps. I got to stay on a schedule, man. Got to stay on the schedule.
All right. Sorry, we'll let you get going. Thank you always for being here.
To do. Yeah. Good night. No, I don't have final words. Don't ask me. Bye.
All right. Works for me. Next game to talk about is called One Step from Eden, developed by Thomas Moon Kang, published by Humble Bundle, released March 26th on the Switch for $19.99. One Step from Eden combines strategic deck building and real-time action with roguelike elements, allowing your character the chance to carve a path of mercy or destruction. Fight alone or with a friend in co-op as you cast powerful spells on the fly, battle evolving enemies, and collect game-changing artifacts. Can you make it to Eden, or will your destruction be imminent? Purnell, tell us about One Step from Eden.
I can tell you, I ain't making no friggin' Eden. Holy cow. This game is very difficult. But let that deter you from giving it a chance, because I'm going to say this game is exactly what I was hoping it would be, and then some. Originally, I came across this game at MAGFest, actually, I want to say 2 years ago, and it was on my radar ever since. So when, of course, when the review time came, I was like, oh, when the game was showed up on the East, I was like, oh, man, it's finally coming out. So, of course, I was concerned. I was like hoping that it still held up, and it did. What the heck am I talking about? Well, One Step from Eden is basically what you get if Slay the Spire and Mega Man Battle Network had a baby. Along with a bit of tweaks and turns. So for those,
I can hear Cole frantically Googling this game because you mentioned Slay the Spire.
You have my attention.
All right, don't go nuts now. I don't need you being like, Purnell, come out to my house. I can cut you. now, the idea behind this is, like, for those who aren't familiar with Mega Man Battle Network, I can explain that a little bit, which will essentially be explained in this game, too. Mega Man Battle Network's claim to fame, quote-unquote, was its battle system, which took place on a grid that was three by three on your side of the screen and then three by three on the opponent's side of the screen. And you were able to move your character around the grid squares that you had control of. And you had a regular attack, which you could hit the R trigger button for, and you would just pretty much fire a gun. But then you also had these abilities, cards. In that game, they were called chips, but in this game, they're called cards. And you use those like you would abilities. You would basically say, hey, I want to use this item, boom. And it would have an effect on the screen dependent on the type of, you know, chip or card. So they go specifically into one step from Eaton now and get away from the Mega Man Battle Network aspect of it, because I want to be very specific on this game now. So it's a similar concept, except now you get like a 4x4 grid on each side, so there's more room for maneuverability. And the cards in this game...
I'm cutting you off for a second, because Candy Pants just dropped 10 bits. So thank you, Candy Pants. George, take it away if the thing will...
Drop it, bits!
With a name like Candy Pants...
Thank you, Candy.
You for the biddies.
Anyway, as you were.
As I was, Candy Pants. So you had a 4x4 grid on your side and also on the opponent's side. But the attacks, in addition to your normal, you know, gun button, which is your R button, is a pretty weak attack, but it's there for you if you need to get some shots off. But your primary way of attacking is through use of cards. Cards are classified in like probably 10 different categories in this game. There's a lot of cards you're going to want. And they all have a variety of different abilities, ranging from simple things like slash a sword to things like give yourself a shield. But when you give yourself a shield, all the panels around where you're standing get a crack in them. And crack panels disappear when you step over them for a limited period, a short period of time. You find yourself in this weird situation where you're trying to balance out how you use your chips and what they do in order to do so. But here's where the rub is. You don't get to plan your deck like you would in, say, like Battle Network. In this game, you choose your default character. You start with one, and as you play through the game, you unlock more. But that character starts with a few types of cards. And as you beat levels... or as you win battles, right? Like, there's no levels in this game, so more just like worlds. But as you win battles or go to shops or whatever, you get new cards. And when you get new cards, you can either put those in your deck and have them occasionally come up, or you can just outright get rid of cards to try to cull your deck. So you're building it on the fly. But the cards you're getting with which to build the deck, at least in these scenarios, aren't chosen by you. They're just, here's a card you won. Do you want this card or not? And you have to kind of just be like, okay, make sense of this, make sense of it. Now, how you actually use them in the game is interesting too, because you have the entire deck at your disposal. And as you're running around the map, dodging attacks and trying to land attacks, you start out with two cards in your reserve pool and a mana cost as a tribute to each one. So if you don't have enough mana to use the cards, you can't use it. But when you do use the card, it gets to your discard pile, a new card comes up, and you run through your entire deck in this fashion. When the deck is expired, it gets shuffled, and it's redealt out to you. You can play the cards again. And of course, if you decide, no, I got all the cards I've wanted to use this round, I want to shuffle a deck now, you can choose to do that too, but you kind of end up wasting time because it takes time to shuffle a deck, so you don't want to willy-nilly shuffle your deck if you don't have to. Now, what's interesting and what makes this kind of challenging, though, is the fact that whereas in something like Slay the Spire, it's, if I remember correctly, like Cole can catch me, I haven't played in a bit. Slay the Spire is still technically turn-based. So when you're looking at your options, like, okay, I want to use this card right now or this card right now, you have time to decide and plan your moves. In this game, though, it's all real-time action. So you'll have up to like, there's up to 300 or so cards in the game. Damn. That all do different things. And you have to understand what your cards do while you're being shot at, while volcanoes are going off, and you're dodging fire and all this mess. You're like, shit, sword! I think it's a sword! You're just like, doing whatever. Oh, just whatever gets you through to survive. But it's interesting because it's a very fun and frantic gameplay style that you adjust to. When I first started playing the game, I was just throwing whatever the hell I had in my deck at whoever was on the screen and hoped it connected, because that was all I could do. But as I played and I started seeing like certain types of cards, I'm like, okay, I'm going to focus. When this chip comes up, I'm ready to play it. Or I'll lay back for a bit and just kind of dodge and just kind of get an understanding of what I want to do with this thing. Maybe I can plan the move out better. Because there's all sorts of these cards that lets you manipulate what the enemies are doing. Like, the enemy can be in the back row. There's a card that says, no, shoot him to the front. And if you have a chip that goes with that, it just punches the guy. You can go push him forward, punch back, and then do an attack that hits him in the back. Like, you can change stuff if you're lucky with it, but it's so much to just understand as you're going that it takes getting used to, which means you're going to die a lot as you get the ropes of this game and come to understand, okay, this is how I want to play, and this is how I want to best, how I want to best proceed and approach this with the game with this character. So, just getting that out there, you're going to be working. This isn't an easy peasy game, and it starts hard from, it pretty much begins being challenging. By the end of the first world, you're going to be challenged. Now, as far as progression goes, you end up, it's like, this is how the Slay the Spire comparison comes into play, aside from just, the deck building element. Each environment you go to is a series of pathways connected by nodes. You choose the nodes you want to go to, and each node has a different event that can be taking place on. It could be a battle event where you're just fighting a battle. There could be a merchant at the place where if you come across the merchant, you can buy new chips or buy new cards. You can purchase the means of which to upgrade cards you've already got by and adding additional properties to them. There is the means of which to sell your blood to get money. Like, literally, you sell your health for cash, which then can be used to purchase stuff. Good luck with that, because healing is not exactly the most common thing outside of, like, certain boss encounters, which I'll get to in a second, actually. But there's a number of things you can do at different shops. There's also, like, something called, they're called packs, where you can pay money to take a penalty on the next one to more battles. But if you succeed despite the penalty, you'll get a reward for it. So it's almost kind of like a gamble, a rewards gamble that you take with the game, which can be cool once you get better at it. You're like, okay, man, I can do this with two hands tied behind my back. Let's just run around without the ability to actually take more than two steps in a row. Crazy stuff like that. There's a variety of different events, including camps where you can rest. And then at the end of the area, you come across a boss battle. And usually the boss battles are single characters who hit really hard, have crazy patterns in their attacks. I mean, like, really crazy patterns. And ultimately, you're going to break your balls to win against every one of them, even the first bosses you tend to see. But when you do win, you have the option to kill them or spare them. I have never killed them because I am not that kind of guy. But whenever I spared them, they always typically healed me and said, go away, or something like that. But I was fine with that because clearly I needed to be healed because this game is hard. And then after that, the game gives you a choice of one of three new environments to go to, which allows you to go to another place with new enemies and a new boss. Watch, rinse, repeat until you either get to Eden, which again, I never managed to reach, or you die. Once you die, depending on how well, basically, I think it's like every level you gained goes into like a pool of collective like levels. And every time you reach a certain cap, you'll unlock a new card that can be found in your future playthroughs of the game. Again, you unlock a lot of cards. There's a lot of play in this thing. But the key element is, again, you have to like the battle system, which I think you will, as long as you're okay with having to think on your feet and be active and honestly just having fun with it. It's a great game. And for those who used to like Mega Man Battle Network, you don't get things like the cool chip combo, at least not that I saw. But in exchange for that, you get a whole deck of cards that you can access one after another instead of waiting for chip change to occur, which is kind of cool. And the guys who made this seem to have put a lot of love into it and had a deep understanding of how Mega Man Battle Network worked. Partly why I think they pretty much were doing exactly that. Say, hey, we like this game. Let's make an updated version of it that's better. And I honestly think they succeeded at that. It's a great title. It's got fantastic music. I like the graphics. I didn't have a single beef with it. At best, the only thing I wish it had was like more of an actual like adventure mode or something with like a narrative, you know, it goes that stuff. Like I wish I was exploring a map and finding secret items and behind shelves or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, but as the game is, I think it's fantastic. And I am very glad I got to review it because I'm glad I didn't gush about it on a show instead of just talking about it on my Facebook wall. I think it's a fantastic title, and it's worth every penny. I will say though, the try it only factors in if the idea of what I said earlier about having to think on your feet and dodge attacks and get all those moves in scares you a little bit. I say stop being scared and try the freaking game, because like with a lot of games of this type, you just have to adjust to it. You learn to play it and you get better. If the game was easy from the start, where'd the challenge be, you know?
Yeah.
Work it up. Work into it. But I think it's worth every penny. It's a fantastic game and a nice update to a game style and that we haven't seen since like the early 2000s now I think about it.
Maybe yeah, I love the Battle Network game. So I'm excited to see this one finally releasing. I hope it comes to more platforms. It's only on the Switch right now. Probably PC as well. I didn't look into it. We're covering it on the Switch, so that's what I'm paying attention to. But hopefully it comes to more platforms in the future.
Me too, because more people need access to this delicious title.
All right. Well, next game to talk about. I've been waiting to talk about this one. I'm excited about this one. Rainbows, Toilets, and Unicorns.
Oh, my. You okay for now?
I don't know.
I don't know.
Yes, Rainbows, Toilets, and Unicorns, developed and published by Fantastico Studio, released March 13th on the Switch, March 16th on the PS4 for $6.99. Fed up with the world and exhausted by the hot weather, you resort to your last hope, your favorite unicorn-flavored ice cream. All of a sudden, you're struck by the urge to visit a bathroom, and the only option to avoid pooping yourself is the chemical toilet down the street. Thus began a bad trip in which you'll have to face your greatest fears in a fight to the last splash. Chris, tell us about Rainbows, Toilets, and Unicorns.
Okay, well, when one rainbow and one toilet really love each other. Okay, I don't know, for some reason that felt like the thing to say. Okay, so this is a shmup or shoot 'em up. Let me explain to you what that is right quick. Just kidding. Okay, so no. This is a vertical shooter. Very much
that in joke the vein, will never get old, by the way.
I know, I love it. Everybody play Beaker Reloaded and watch the tutorial. Or I'm gonna find it on YouTube and see if I can like get it to people. But anyways, so this is a vertical shooter in which your hero, did he have a name? Does he have a name?
I don't know. It doesn't say in the write-up, so.
He's a dude. He's got a jacket on.
Let's
with
name
a
him Purnell.
On it. Purnell. Okay, yeah. So you play as Purnell. And yeah, the opening cinema has you showing you enjoying a unicorn-like soft serve, which, of course, if you pay attention to memes or whatever it is, you know, unicorns poop out rainbows, you know, that's the whole thing. But yeah, it definitely gives you the shit, so you have to like get to a toilet. And what happens is that once you're in there, the ensuing rainbow that comes out of you and through the toilet, through the you know thing, and onto the ground propels you into outer space, where you then begin a shooter adventure, where your bullets are actually called sparkle barf. So you're basically barfing up sparkles onto different enemies. Now, this is where the game gets weird.
I got to know, is this a shoot 'em up or a shit 'em up?
It's a shit 'em up.
Oh, my God.
you are being shat up in this game. It's very true. Very good point. I didn't even write that joke. That's some good thinking on your feet, as it were.
I try,
folks.
So each stage is like basically a parody, a satire, a commentary on the events of today. Basically, you are to sparkle vomit onto like different aspects of life that are horrible. Starting with the level OMG, where you fight all the religions. Yeah. And here's where, like, when I booted up this game and looked at the levels, because there's, you know, there's like, it shows you five different stages, you know, only one of which you can play. You have to unlock the rest. And seeing these categories, I was like, oh, this is something I'm not going to want to review because it's going to be like bad. It's going to be, you know, not offensive. I don't care about offensive, quote unquote, but it's going to be like, you know, it's going to have some problematicness to it. But then you get into, like, you know, shooting these religious figures, and it's just like you're shooting Catholic priests. You shoot a statue of Buddha. You know, and there's like various temples and symbols of all the religions like passing by. And it's just like, okay, this is just, you're shooting abstract concepts. You know, there's not like anything to really, you know, ballyhoo about that. And, yeah, basically each, and then at that point, so I was like, okay, so this game looks like it's just kind of like abstract and weird, but maybe not like, specifically funny about anything. It's just like, oh, you shoot a bunch of priests out of the sky. Haha, I get it. And then you get to the bosses, and each boss is like amazing, like on a level that I don't even want to describe very many of them because they're all a lovely surprise. But I'll go ahead and give away the ones in a couple of levels just to get people interested in this. Okay, so, you know, in the, you know, you fight a guy with a turban on a magic carpet in as one of the stage bosses. And I'm like, okay, that's about the most borderline, this might not be okay thing in the whole game. And then you fight like a Catholic priest who looks weird. And okay, the last boss. Okay, so it's basically every stage is divided into five parts, and there are three bosses in each part. So at the end of part one, three, and five, you have a boss. Just like any bullet hell shooter, they've all got a predictable pattern and all things like that. Which, anyways, the final boss for the religion thing is Tom Cruise jumping up and down on a couch.
Wait, what?
Tom Cruise, the actor and known Scientologist, jumping up and down on a couch as, you know, replaying his infamous appearance on Oprah, where he jumped up and down on her couch.
Oh, my freaking God.
Yeah, so now I was like, okay, this game has got some chops. And so you get through that, and then, like, the other stages are Influencerama, which you fight through the concept of social media.
which
again has some of the best bosses, the first one being a streamer who is also playing the game against you. And think of the most famous streamer in the world and then make his hair green, and you know who I'm talking about. That's the person you have to fight as the first boss. Then you get into political drama, which again I was like, okay, this is gonna get bad, I'm gonna hate this. But no, you just fight through the abstract concept of, like, you know, Republican elephants and Democrat donkeys. And then porcupines, which are, I'm going to assume, third parties.
Libertarians
can be pretty prickly, yes. and they are rodential. but anyways, but the bosses are parodies of three dictators that are currently operating, and I'll let y'all guess who the third one is, but let me tell you, you're never gonna like guess how he's presented. And but you got to get to the end of the third level to figure that out.
Oh man. Now I want to see.
Yeah.
Fuck. I gotta buy this just so I could see, hey, Fantastico Studio, why is this not on Xbox? What's going on here?
Yeah, come on. Bring it on everything. This is great. The fourth one is just titled Outraged and Offended, and it has picket signs that say angry slogan here. Now, this is where, again, I was like, oh, no, this is going to be bad. I'm going to hate this because they're going to poke fun at somebody that they don't need to be poking fun at. No, it's amazing. Like, I'm going to give away all of the ones in level four because I love them so much. So the enemies are things like ugly naked couples. Then there's, actually, I had to look this up on Google because I forgot what they were called, but Femen protesters. Do you remember them?
No.
They're just white people, mostly in Europe, and they're famous for their, like, really over-exaggerated topless protests. So, like, it's women who, like, just have everything out and, you know, they write on their bodies and stuff like that. And they're kind of known for being more of a caricature than an actual, like, real legitimate movement. They're kind of like the PETA of, like, gender rights. So they're definitely worth making fun of. And, yeah, you have to fight them. And, of course, they got the censored boobies that, you know, as they're flying by, you know, there's nothing like above like a teen rating in this game. The bosses end up being an anti-vaxxer mom who has like who's holding a sign with a needle crossed out on it, and she's wearing a tinfoil hat, and it's actually really tough. The second one is literally the earth flat as a pancake.
Oh my god.
Because you're passing by signs that say it's flat. Like, all, you know, there's always like remnants of, like, you know, there's like all these ideas that are just kind of in the background that you're scrolling by, because everything's like this cloudy level in space kind of deal. And so that you just, like, you fly by all these visual gags and stuff like that. And some of the regular enemies in Outraged and Offended are literal red pills.
Oh god.
And like signs in the background that say I'm a nice guy. And the third boss in the stage is a bearded, tattooed white guy who is a vegan who is throwing vegetables at you.
Oh my lord.
And I was like, this is actually people I know. And anyways. So then the
I'm looking at the game's only E10, not even T-rated.
No, besides the fact that it's like predicated on poop, it's like nothing is adult about this game. It's very immature. And then the final stage, you're fighting against a certain entertainment media conglomerate and all of the properties it has recently obtained. So you can get, it's called Entertainment Core, but you can tell by the mouse with the big ears on it on the stage preview what you're dealing with here. And that was like the funniest stage of all. Yeah, that's the generic priest that you're showing. Oh, yeah, that's in the Influencerama stage. There it is. The tanned toupee.
Nice. This is beautiful.
Yeah. Okay, so now that I've talked about like the absolutely amazing things that you'll see in the game, and by the way, here in the game, because it's got a great like Eurobeat soundtrack, like not Eurobeat, but it's like a really good happy shmup soundtrack. So the actual gameplay of it is that your character flies really fast. Like, you move across the screen faster than your bullets can reach the top of the screen. Like, you are extremely fast as a ship. And your bullets are very slow. So basically what it amounts to is that you're going to like be bouncing from side to side on the screen, just trying not to hit bullets and like just kind of spraying your sparkle barf everywhere. And that's the best way to like handle it. Enemies will all drop crystals. And as you collect crystals, it upgrades your attack power. And then you also get power ups like a shield that adds you an extra hit, which I'll get to that in a moment. You get a power up that like gives you more bullets for a limited time. Like, it, you know, just the sparkle barf is off the charts. And every time you beat a boss of the two mini bosses in the stages, you get a little like option ship that's a little tiny, unicorn who is also sparkle barfing all over everything. And things like that. So the thing is about this game is that each one of these levels, again, has five sub levels and three bosses. If you get hit one time in any of that, then you have to start that world over.
This is
a one hit shmup, which is, those are rare nowadays. But I think the one from last week is kind of like that. But no, that's just one life. Now, this isn't even one life, it's one hit. If you get a shield, which the game thankfully is really generous about giving you, like they'll give you a shield in the middle of a boss fight, and it's, you know, if you can get to it. But yeah, you really have to like kind of learn these stages. And so repetition is key. But it's not a bullet hell in that it is like super challenging. It's just like once you kind of get into a pattern, then you'll eventually get through it. It is very good for the beginner to moderate shooter fan. The hardcore will laugh at the small amount of bullets and easy to predict, patterns that the bosses have. So, it's not a treacherous game. It's just very unforgiving on two points. And one is that one life thing. And the other is that your ship has a huge hitbox. Because it's a dude on a toilet shitting rainbows endlessly. pretty much the whole of the dude, no pun intended, is the hitbox. So that's basically about it. Like, that's the only not even a complaint. That's just a thing to let people know what you're getting into. I honestly love this game because I love that they created a bright, colorful, really smooth playing, actually funny game, while perfectly towing that line, you know, between being purposely offensive and then actually being, like, you know, problematic. Like, I wouldn't call much of anything in this game, like, actually a problem. It's taking the piss out of things that need to get the piss taken out of them. And for that reason, I'm very, very happy with it.
Well, then for $7, what's your verdict?
Yeah, everybody go out and get this one. That's pretty darn good. I mean, unless you're a vegan, then you might be outraged and offended. I'm sorry.
All right. Hopefully this one comes to Xbox. Fantastico Studio, seriously, don't leave us out on this. I want to play this.
I know it's on Switch, too, and I might just pick it up for Switch on my own.
Yeah, Switch and PS4 right now. So fingers crossed it comes to Xbox in the future. Yeah. Next game to talk about is called Arafel Enhanced Edition, developed by Stegosoft Games, published by Dangan Entertainment, released March 26th on Xbox One, Switch, PS4, and PC for $14.99. Long, long ago, the elven sorcerers cast a spell to save the floating world of Arafel from destruction. Instead, they doomed it to fall from the sky. By chance, the fate of the world has been placed in the hands of a young woman. Join her as she and her friends endeavor against all odds to save their homeland, all while the clock ticks ever near the final hour. Pernell, tell us about Arafel.
By the way, I'm excited about this one.
Did you get to play it, Chris?
Yeah, I did a little bit. I bought it 2 days ago, and I've played about 3 hours into it.
Nice. So, Pernell, tell us about it.
I got to be wondering what he's going to think of what I say then, because now the pressure's on. Yeesh.
It's fine. So,
Arafel, whatever. This game is interesting to me because I kind of get this vibe that this feels like what the Kimco games that I used to review were going for. In that when I play this, I honestly do get a weird sense of like, this feels kind of like an SNES RPG right here. In the good way, because I feel like the writing in this is actually pretty decent. Like the character, it feels like stuff is actually happening in a way where it's definitely video game contrived, but it's not haphazard in the same regard. Like, it feels more like, all right, this is naturally progressing in a decent, you know, flow. Let me get to the actual gameplay as a whole and everything, aside from just that random quip. So the way this game works is that you start out as Lita and her friend Adrian, and you are pretty much going on like a bit of a spelunk, let's call it like a adventurer spelunking errand to find treasure, but that ultimately results in, as JRPGs go, the discovery of an artifact that leads them down a path to saving the world. But I don't know. Like, the game, honestly, as you play through the game, it actually feels good. Like, the environments are very beautiful. The choice of them going with Sky Islands was a very wise one on their part, because as you're exploring the outdoor environments, particularly, it just pops visually. Colors are, it's very colorful. You can see, like, from the back, it's like islands on the surface, pretty much on the lower surface, waterfalls that just shoot off the side of the mountain face or outside of the landmass to wherever the heck it's going to go. It's a beautiful game.
It is gorgeous. But I do feel that some of the areas and some of the scenes are a bit too busy, though, and there's a bit too much detail.
Yeah, I could definitely agree with that, because when you're exploring certain areas, let's say, for example, like, it's a game like, okay, we need you to go to this place and find the thing. Like, okay, no problem. And you're trying to find your way over there. There's so much popping. In some respects, you get lost in the scenery. Like, you're like, okay, well, I guess I'm supposed to go northeast from here. But between all the mountain passes and the flora and the fauna and all the random doodads I could pick up, which I'll get to shortly, there's a lot happening, and it's very easy to get lost.
I think the navigation is probably the weakest part of the game. Mm-hmm. If we're going to just go ahead and jump into that boat.
Are you playing too?
I am, yeah.
I get lost a lot.
Even if there had been like some kind of compass or something just on the screen as part of your normal HUD, it would be a big help, because a lot of the times the villagers will tell you, oh, that you need to go to the southwest, you need to go to the east, and you're like, okay, but fucking how?
I don't think the world map was very good.
The world map is awful. I'm sorry.
The world
sorry.
Map is like a pencil sketching.
It's adorable. But it, like, you can't zoom in to say, like, okay, this is where the market is, this is where this merchant is, or I have a quest here. It's just there. Here's an area that you can go to. Here's an area that you can go to. Here's an area that you can go to. Once you unlock the fast travel crystals, it helps a little more. But as far as like finding the nitty gritty detail stuff, you're on your own. I've been walking around for hours looking for some of the most mundane things, and I'm like, I know it was here. I know I saw it.
It reminds me of there's this one game I played called Argella or Argella or whatever it was. Like, it was like, it's a game that plays kind of like Monster Hunter or Monster Boy. In the same regard, where like you're running around trying to find where you're going, but when you bring up the world map, it's just, here are some places.
Mm-hmm.
You're at this one. Okay, so how do I get to that one? It's up there somewhere. You should try to find it. Like, that's not helping me. I don't know what's happening. But But like, that is definitely, I will say, that's definitely the weakest element of the game that I've come across too. Cause I mean, let me see. Well, for example, let's go into like some of the other things, like the battle system in the game. It's pretty straightforward. Like, it's basic. But maybe it's because of the music that's used in the battles. I'm not sure, but it doesn't really get the heart pumping, but it's also not a bad battle system. It's just, it gets the job done. Though some positives to the battle system that I do like is that it's designed so that at the end of every battle, you get your hit points and your magic points back. So,
which I love in games. I love when they do that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Same.
And they do, there is a bit of a challenge to it too. Like, even on normal, I mean, if you kind of skip a lot of battles or whatnot, you're going to get your ass rocked. But at the same time, it's not so overbearing that you have to grind your way through it. If you just kind of just fight a decent number of battles as you play through the game, you should be able to manage against anything you come across. Grinding is at a minimum, which is good.
Something else I love about the battle system is the inclusion of story mode.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
The story one mode difficulty is story mode. And in battles, if you don't want to fight a battle, there's an option in battle that says story mode. You hit it and the enemy dies. The end.
Like, you're playing
bosses included.
Like, it's such an interesting concept in that regard. I was like, I can't handle this. And I was like, well, story. But I will say this, I do wish that rather than have it as, you know, like its own mode, it should be like a switch you could select in the game too. Because let's say, for example, I'm like, I want to play it on, I don't know, let's say I put it on the hardest difficulty because I was like, I'm ready to grind this out. And then as I'm in the game, all of a sudden I was like, you know what, this was a bad idea, I'm getting my ass beat by this boss, I'm tired of grinding. It'd be nice if I could say, okay, activate story mode right now, and I have to start the game over. But that's a small nitpick, I'll admit, but that's something that comes to mind there.
I think the reason they don't have that is one of the achievements in the game is for beating the game on the hard difficulty without ever losing a battle.
Oh, and somebody could totally cheese that if they had that like that.
That's why story mode is its own separate difficulty for the people who just want to experience the story. And if they get hung up on a boss fight that they're struggling with, or if they're just trying to grind through a bit and get some levels up, you can do it easily with story mode. And it is, I love that feature. I wish more RPGs would have that.
They definitely do need access to that sort of thing. If anything, it just makes it more accessible to people who just want to play games for a narrative and not for the actual game, like the challenger of it or whatnot. The actual attacks in the game, too, like the way they work is that there are typical skills, magic or whatnot, but when you find certain crystals in the game, those crystals being attributed to the class that your character is, you can use that crystal on any attacks you've unlocked already to gain upgrades to them, typically increasing their power level and things of that nature, which is kind of cool in that regard because you get to choose when you want a certain skill to be buffed up. So I might say, hey, you know what? I'm a huge fan of, you know, my first aid. I need to really have access to better healing. So I can just dump my crystal into that immediately and then worry about the other upgrades later. Kind of nice how they can do that. But in addition to that, though, you also don't have to worry about, you do get items in the game. But equipment and the like, you don't have to buy. You pretty much have the equipment you're going to have on your character. And the way you increase the strength of it is by actually buffing it up with crafting. So if you find items on the field, you'll find a lot of items on the field. Oh, my God. You can take those items into the crafting screen, go down to your character's inventory, say, okay, I want to upgrade this person's shield. Okay, his shield upgrade requires these three things. Do I have them? Yes. And then you upgrade it, boom, it gets all the defense buffs that it would get. It changed this shield, it changed the name, so it becomes a new piece of equipment and everything. And it's pretty much the equivalent of like getting all that stuff that you usually get by going to a store and buying up their inventory. But instead, it's just like, hey, I'm going to use this stuff, get my upgrade now. I don't have to worry about going back to a store to get it. I'm just going to get it now. There's a nice, I actually don't mind that at all. I do wish that there were upgrade paths or trees, though. So I could be like, you know, I want something that's more focused towards this as opposed to this. It's a very structured, you're going from here to here to here to here upgrade system, which again, isn't bad. Just would have been cool if it was like, hey, I had some choices here.
Yeah.
But honestly, I'm okay with this game. Like, I'll admit that when I play RPGs, I like that added level of tension with like fast paced hard music or whatever every once in a while. This game is it's got a very calming vibe to it. Like, even in the battles, like, there's no battle theme aside from the boss fights. So you're pretty much just getting the music from the actual map you're on, and all the map music is very relaxing. So the battle music is very relaxing. Aside from that sort of element, I actually found myself okay with this game. I was entertained by it. I got a bit of nostalgia vibes from it. And I honestly think that this is a game that a person could play if they wanted to get a taste of RPGs on their system, and also just get a hint of nostalgia, you know, a little bit more throwback vibe to it. Like, this reminds me of something that could have been done, like, say, RPG Maker. And I say that in a good way, because I like RPG Maker games as long as they're done well. So I'm honestly okay with this game. I think it's a solid product.
Cole, what did you think of your time with it?
I pretty much agree with Purnell. I think it definitely struck me as like what Kimco games could be. So I definitely saw a lot of similarities, but I could also appreciate where RFL was quite a bit more polished. But I also agree that it was a little cluttered and hard to navigate. So it's not perfect, but I think it's a good taste for RPGs.
Chris, you didn't have as much time as us, but what did you think?
No, I think that's fine. Yeah, it was definitely like, it was weird that they decided to just go with the no battle music kind of thing, because that's such a staple of like RPGs, especially JRPGs.
Yeah.
I look forward to hearing the battle music for the first time. I was like, wait, what is it? Where is it?
I think aesthetically it is beautiful, and like, I actually like busy like artwork and like, you know, really, really great sprite work going into that. So that's not really my complaint. But yeah, it does fall on the simple-ish side. But again, I've played much worse $15 RPGs, that's for sure.
True.
So also, as far as the Kemco thing goes, I would add Kemco / XCreate, because Hit Point is knocked out of the park. Yeah, I love
the Kemco. XCreate is the rough stuff. One.
Well, XCreate's the one that everything looks like it's made in RPG Maker for sure.
Yeah. You
know, I think they're mechanically sound. It's just, you know.
They're somewhat generic, but I still enjoy the Kemco games. Someone was asking about them because there's a big Kemco sale on Xbox this week. Someone's like, are they any good? They look like they're just mobile phone games. And I'm like, well, they are.
They are.
But they're fairly solid. They're fairly basic, but they're enjoyable. And if you like retro RPGs, it fills a niche that isn't really on Xbox.
Yeah. And I feel like Arafel feels a little more authentic in that sense. It belongs on a console.
Yeah. Well, Purnell, $15, what is your verdict?
I honestly think it's a buy. Just be ready for some wacky getting lost times.
All right. Next game to talk about is called Doggerai, developed by Hungry Bear Games, published by Cubite Interactive, released March 24th on Switch and PS4 for $4.99. In a dystopian future where armies and the police were replaced by robots and machines, their creator decided to take over the world. Now it's up to Bones, a retired dog samurai from the special forces, to fight against the robot menace alone. Chris, tell us about this one.
I didn't know that he had a name and that it's Bones and that he's retired. A retired samurai.
I'm too old for this shit.
I'm almost 12 years old, man. Okay. So Doggerai is a, so it's basically a very, very Game Boy flavored, you know, in the sense that it is monochrome and has a very small screen that, that is set in the middle of a, you know, background, a la like a Super Game Boy kind of situation. Kind of a ninja game. It's, it very much seems to draw from, things like Ninja Gaiden, and, it has a little bit of Shatterhand to it and some Mega Man. You go through a stage which has, like, you know, enemies set in a pattern, and, you know, they're all robots, and so it does the cool thing where it's like everybody that you fight, you know, you slice them in half and you see their like halves like fly off and explode and things like that. Really cool looking, you know, for the fact that it's 8-bit. And it's also got a pretty cool little like 8-bit soundtrack too that doesn't get into ultra busy territory, which I do kind of appreciate, you know. I like it when everybody's not trying to be Vert. except Vert. Vert can be Vert all day.
Yeah.
But yeah, so it's got like some interesting moves to it. It's got the, you know, obviously the regular sword slash. It's got the, jump and the double jump, of course. And, it also has a slide just like Mega Man 3. And what I like about the slide is that you can either, push down and jump to access it, just like in Mega Man, or you can actually just push the circle button and that will automatically do a slide. So a little bit like Mega Man X in that way, that you have the option of either doing it through the controls, through the jump controls, or with its own separate button if you prefer. So the stages are constructed in such a way that, you have a couple of checkpoints and stuff like that in between, lots and lots of like stuff coming out of nowhere because of the limited view of the screen. Although this doesn't fall into the trap that, older games like, let's say Donkey Kong Country kind of fall into, where they tried to make the sprite too big and elaborate for the game field. And thus when stuff comes at you, it's like, you feel like it shouldn't, like, you're like, I should be able to see that. It's actually pretty tight on like the design that way. However, you will die 1,000,000,000 times in each stage due to the exact same thing unless you learn where it is, where it's coming from, and how to avoid it. Fortunately, the game has two modes. They have hard mode, which is basically NES mode, where you have lives and continues, or normal mode, which is infinite lives. So, you know, you just, as soon as you die, you just start, like, right over. It has a save system, which accesses three files, which is very nice and nostalgic. Once you beat the first area, you actually have your option of four other areas, and you can take them in any order. Now, what I like about them, well, it's love-hate, and I'll explain why in a second, but each one is actually really different. They have, like, of course, the volcano level where you have to, like, go through and, you know, there's a lot of lava around. And, of course, that's instant death. But, you know, the enemies are going to try and knock you into it. And then there's one sequence where you have to outrun the lava while also platforming and slashing enemies. And it's very, very, very tough.
And, bless you, Catherine.
Joe says bless you.
Thank you.
She says thank you.
Wow.
You know, the cool thing is that there's, I was looking through the trophies because I feel like on PS4 I should be looking through the trophies because y'all tend to ask and I'm always like not prepared to answer the question. But there's one for getting through the volcano area without getting hit. And I'm like, okay, this is not a Rattalaika game. This one makes you earn the trophies. But anyway, then there's like a desert level where it has a long, and I mean long, sequence where it becomes an auto scroller where you're riding a motorcycle, which is reminiscent of like the one stage in like Mega Man X2. I think it was the ostrich stage. I can't remember his name.
Overdrive Ostrich.
Thank you. X2 was never my strongest one, but I remember that sequence for sure. It's like that, except there's no enemies. There's just really rapidly, like, coming at you, like, platforms and stuff, and you have to, like, make decisions really quickly. But it was actually really playable, so I enjoyed that. And then there's the fucking ice level. Which, by the way, I accidentally picked first. And I was ready to hate this game by the end of the illegal experiments at the cryo labs. Sorry. It's hard to read it, and it looks like it says cryo lads.
I wish it said cryo lads.
You had to beat up the cryo lads, a rival gang. but besides that, each of the levels are actually really different, and I appreciated that. And like bringing a variety like that to a monochrome game is actually pretty nice. Now, speaking of monochrome, what I like about them is that they made some good decisions in terms of like the sprite being smaller, the stages being able to accommodate that, whereas like they're not throwing everything at you like from off screen and you have to like play half the game off the screen, like again, Donkey Kong Country, which by the way, I beat for the first time ever last week, so that's why it's on my mind.
Nice.
Just that one always evaded me. But like that's the thing about it is that it's, you know, that game, have you ever noticed that it's pan and scan?
Mm-hmm.
Like when you jump, it moves the entire screen to like look up at things that are above you and like that. Yeah, anyway, so this game's not like that. They actually know their limitations better, you know, because obviously these retro throwback developers have the benefit of hindsight. So the sprite is nice and small. The levels are nice and accommodating for that. It's very hard sometimes to see your character because of, again, the monochrome thing. There's literally one sequence in a level where you are running by a city, right? And there's like you're going to a factory, essentially, or kind of a complex thing. And there's a city in the background. And when there's a long portion where you're running alongside it. Well, the above the city is white because, you know, the background is white and the buildings themselves are green or gray or whatever. There's actually all these different color palettes to choose from, including like Game Boy green or like actual contrast green where, you know, blacks are blacks, but greens are still greens. They have a pretty good variety there, but nothing in true color. But yeah, like when you're running by, like it's distractingly obvious that the exact line that your sprite's white head populates is against the white background and his green bodysuit is against the green building in the exact same color. Your character is almost unrecognizable in that moment.
Oh man.
Fortunately his feet are black and there's not a whole lot of black background. So, you know, except in other levels, but like there's usually just enough pixels where you can still tell what you're doing. But I was just like, there's got to be a way they could have made this look a little better for that, because I don't really remember. Only some Game Boy games did that, but like, you know, the other thing again is that like it gets really hard and unforgiving in places, and sometimes it's just frustrating to the point where I actually found myself more running through areas than actually staying and fighting the enemies. Cause I was like, well, I'm definitely going to take a hit from this thing. So why don't I just go around, like take the hit and go around it with my iframes? Like I ended up speed running some levels and I was kind of like, well, it's, you know, not that satisfying. The other thing is a complete lack of sub weapons. I don't think I got a second weapon at all, like in the entire game. Hmm. And, you know, but it's fine because like the overhead sword swing is like a wide arc. Oh, and there is one more thing that is really great. And that is that occasionally you'll run into an enemy who has a lot more life, but you'll be able to use a finishing move on them. So when it, when the moment happens, it basically, flings the enemy in the air and like time slows down. And then your doggo appears on each side of him. And then it does controller prompts like, with a bit of a rhythm game function. So it'll show like left and then there's a circle closing around the left. And when that circle completely closes around the left, you push left and then it'll go to the other side and it'll be like up. And then, you know, like in a pattern like that. And that's a way that's used on regular enemies as well as pretty much every boss. And it lets you like do this like, you know, quick time event sequence to do like a whole bunch of damage. And I think that's really cool because you don't see that in like retro games very often. And you see it entirely too much in modern games. So it's like, and it's nice that they use it only on occasion kind of thing.
Yeah.
So it's a game that is like, you know, kind of holds itself back, but at the same time, it feels like a really good like retro game. And, you know, like I said, I beat a lot of levels on this one. So like, it wasn't like frustrating to the point where I stopped playing at any point. I actually played quite a lot of it. And again, I really love the aesthetics and the variety in the levels and things like that.
Nice. So overall $5 on this one. What do you think?
Oh yeah, $5. I mean, I shouldn't be complaining at all. Like, that's cheap. It's a quality game for $5. Absolutely. So I'm going to give it a buy it on that, or a, you know, fuck it, why not kind of thing. Yeah, if you're like too frustrated by old school gameplay, then, you know, it's old school. So what can I tell you?
Yeah.
But apart from that, at least it has like the thing of, you know, infinite lives and stuff. And plus, like, you know, the levels are also like really rife with secrets. And occasionally these secrets are, you know, things like power ups, but sometimes they're just people who say like one line, and like it's an NPC or something like that. And it's like clearly some kind of in joke or something. Like, I don't understand it at all, but you get a trophy if you find all of them. So
nice.
Yeah.
That's what everyone cares about, trophies.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. There's plenty of like secret stuff to find in the game too. Like, again, I appreciate the thoughts that went into this game.
Nice. So,
yeah.
All right. Next game to talk about is called Miles and Kilo, developed and published.
Wait.
What?
I'm not ready for that. Next week for me. I think
next week. Yeah, son of a bitch.
Had to cut you. Hey, at least I caught you before you went through the statement.
You son of a bitch. I'm not cutting this. It's staying in.
Just
not editing the goddamn thing.
You got to leave
it.
We're
going to tag them and they're going to hear you weren't ready.
That's part of the humor. Like, guys, no way.
You could have been playing that game during the rest of the show and been ready.
It's actually true. I was going to say, you should just cut in like my review from the Swiss
Bread. Just like, yo, let's talk about what we had for breakfast this morning. Oh, what do you know? You can talk about the game.
I have the show written up and everything, and Miles and Kilo is a part of it. Damn it, I'm going to have to like rewrite things. And
the creators are listening.
No, you're just going to have to let it be what it is. And then they get to hear that this is the review because Purnell was too busy taking a nap in the dryer.
Couldn't you take a nap in the washer? Come on, it's cooler in there.
He should go ahead with the review anyway, with just the disclaimer that he actually hasn't played the game.
So just describe what you imagine it is. Is a game about a boy who is hanging out with his dog as he runs across crazy colorful worlds collecting fruit.
Yeah, you pretty much nailed it.
Yeah.
Damn.
It's almost like
better than my review.
It's like all Adventure right. Island. But
I did an interview with the dev, and I think he still nailed it better than I did.
All right, so we're not doing that one this week. Final game to talk about is called Color Grid, developed by Minimal Games, published by Cubite Interactive, released March 24th on the Switch for 99 cents. Color Grid is a puzzle game about mixing colors in a lab. Find the correct positions for your lasers and mirrors and get the right mix of colors in each material. Chris, tell us about Color Grid.
Wait a minute,
you son of a bitch.
I thought I was doing Arafel this week. Why I played it for 3 hours. Okay. Color Grid is a puzzle game. That's how they say it in France.
Puzzle.
Puzzle. Okay, so what it is it is literally a grid. It just like pops a number at you, like one, and that's level one. Like it just starts. It's like, except for the fact that like it's like weird because it has the three like buttons on it, like the settings on your phone or whatever, but I can't figure out how to get them to work with the controller. I think there's some way.
Hmm.
Oh wait, there it is. Okay, I found it. Never mind.
See, Chris reviews things as he plays them, where Purnell is like,
I do play them as I review them. It's true, but I do play them first as well. But, yeah, so what it is that you get these little squares. Each one has a different color and, you know, a primary color, of course. And in the stage somewhere, there are blocks that will hold these things in place. Or something like that. And then sometimes there are slanted mirrors and whatnot. And basically, as soon as you push the, like, right trigger or double tap, it's a very, like, touch screen friendly kind of game. It's like, very much arranged like a mobile game is what I meant to say earlier. But basically when you turn on the laser, it will shoot a laser out that will go, you know, until it's stopped. In the stage, there are going to be different little diamond shape kind of things that are that have access points on each side, and, you know, or not, I suppose. But anyways, the when a laser hits one of those access points, it lights up the square, and thus you're when you get all of them lit up, then you pass the stage. It takes about 11 stages to very slowly explain this to you, like, because it doesn't give you any text. It's just like, you know, play around with this until you get it. But like, once you do one thing, then it's like, oh, you passed, you know, kind of thing. And then you move on to other stages. And then as soon as you're done, like, learning it, then it really, like, actually throws puzzles at you, which is kind of great. Now, the thing about it, again, like, the laser goes persistently forward. Sometimes it's stopped by an obstacle somewhere in the level. Sometimes it hits a mirror, which is like a slanted thing, which will then, of course, reflect the laser in whatever direction the mirror is pointing. And you'll need this information because sometimes you might have one laser, but you got to light up eight different things. And so it's very important that you get it, you know, in the right spot and, you know, and lit up and like that everything works. Because the other thing about it is that some of the things that you're lighting up are actually going to be secondary colors like green or purple. So you have to, or orange. So you have to like combine the laser from a yellow laser and a red laser in some way in order to get it lit up. But you can't just like put them both in a row because the one, you know, laser turret's going to stop the other laser. So you got to place it elsewhere in the level and have it reflect over to it. You know, there's just like all kinds of like options as to how that laser is going to reach. And then, you know, like I said, sometimes you'll have like eight colors, but three of them might be like, you know, eight colors of red, but three of them might be purple. So you got to place that blue laser somewhere where it only lights up those three and makes them purple. I was very into how complex this entire arrangement gets pretty early on. And yet something about it is just like it, everything, like the placement for everything feels kind of natural. Like it's puzzles that make a lot of sense. Like I said, they didn't have to throw a single word at you. And, you know, I got through the first 20 stages on the first day with no problem. So it's like, you know, and then of course, like I said, it ramps up from there. And I think the total amount of levels is 100, something like that. Let me go back to the level select and figure this out. Cause like it does this thing where, the levels are presented as, you know, green things being shot with a green laser. And of course, you know, like it opens up each one and the laser passes through. It's presented weird. I think there's 70 stages to this, unless there's even more, but they show you 70 on the level select. Yeah.
It's a lot.
It's pretty, yeah. It's a medium amount of color of puzzles. And what I like about it is the sense that this is the kind of puzzle game that you could play with a pencil and paper. Or like with blocks, like you could actually play this puzzle game in real life. And that's what I appreciate about it is that it's really presented as realistic as possible with while being just abstract shapes and lines, you know. So it's got a pretty good amount of polish on it. And again, I did not find it like boring or too hard. So, I mean, that's pretty much a winner right there for me.
Nice. So $1 on it. What do you think?
Yeah, go ahead and get it for $1 if you like puzzle games. Nice. I mean, there's nothing bad or wrong about it. Like it's a good little mind teaser, so I like it.
Awesome, sounds good.
Mm-hmm.
All right, well that is it for this episode. Thank all of you for being here. Thanks for Tim for being here as well. Oh shit.
What's that?
Oh shit. What? My program is frozen.
Oh
no. The streaming program is frozen.
How long ago do you think it's been frozen from?
I have no clue. Oh my god. Oh fuck. Well, so what are you guys doing tomorrow?
working then streaming.
No.
Hey guys. Hey guys.
Did we lose the entire episode?
Guys, April Fools.
You son of a bitch!